You're listening to a repeat of the 96FM Opinion Line. Phone and text lines are now closed. The Opinion Line with PJ Coogan. 1850-715-996.
Good morning to you. It's Deirdre O'Shaughnessy here on Cork's number one talk show, The Opinion Line. It's Friday. PJ's off on a well-deserved break and the lines are open on 1850 715 996. Brenda and Fergal are waiting to take your calls. My first morning taking over from Ross and Casey. Aaron's doing a fabulous job. They certainly bring a bit of life to the place, I have to say. And some very interesting t-shirts, but that's mainly Ross. You can check out their Facebook videos to see the sartorial attire that he is usually wearing. Today it's a lovely tropical number. So fair play to them. They're doing great and we're delighted to have them on board. Now, loads coming up on the show for you this morning. We have things they can ask you in a job interview. You probably know that there are restrictions on the things they can ask you in a job interview, but apparently not everybody does, because we got a query in from a listener about this, and the responses we've got from people seem to indicate that there's a bit of confusion actually about what they can and can't ask you in an interview setting. If you've been asked something that you felt was inappropriate in a job interview, do give us a shout, let us know, because it seems to be the level of knowledge about it seems to be a bit vague. We also have some stuff coming up, a couple of different scams. I'll be going to one of those first. Lindsay is on the line to talk to me about that. We're going to be talking about a cancer drug which is being taken off the market. We were contacted by Declan, whose mom has cancer, and she's going to speak to us. The drug that she's currently on is being taken off the market. We've also been contacted by a number of people following yesterday's discussion about the RTE licence fee, so we'll be continuing that, plus loads more. If you have anything you want to bring up with me this morning, 1850 715 996. You can text or WhatsApp the show on 0833 96 96 96, or of course you can tweet us at opinionline96. Loads and loads of ways to get in touch there, so please make sure that you do. So we have Lindsay is on the line. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning, Deirdre.
Can you speak up a small bit, Lindsay? There, your line is a little bit a little bit fuzzy. It's early in the morning, I know.
No bothers, can you hear?
I can. Now, Lindsay, I was talking to you earlier this week because we've been doing a little bit of work on this. It was your brother, I think, contacted us initially about a fine that your daughter received in the post.
Yeah, on Monday she got a fine. A registered letter I signed for illegal dumping for €150.
Ooh.
And it was actually in Shanbally in Raheem the fine came from.
Okay, and you live in the city?
Yeah, we do. And she actually doesn't drive, or she'd have no reason to be down in Shanbally anywhere.
Yeah.
So it took me ages to figure out that I was after contacting a lad on a Facebook page, Paul Burke is his name, and I paid him €60 to come away, or to come up and take a skip bag of rubbish away. I was after buying a skip bag in the garage and filled it with black bags of rubbish, as you do. Contacted him. He came up within an hour, paid him €60, and he took it away. And 2 months, that was back in May, so 2 months later down the line now, I'm after getting a fine in the door for my daughter.
So €150, how much did it cost you to get the bags taken away in the first place?
€60.
So you've now paid €210 for this rubbish that you thought had been perfectly disposed of?
Yeah.
So what's the story with this guy?
I actually can't get through to him at the moment. His phone is ringing out. I've texted him. There's a couple of people after using him and they have nothing come back from him.
Right. So is he just gone underground?
That's it, yeah. He seems to be uncontactable.
Oh, okay. So you met him?
I did.
Did he have any idea or anything like that? Do you know that Paul Burke is his real name?
No.
Now, I looked him up on Facebook when your brother contacted us, Lindsay, originally. And his Facebook profile is a picture of a truck, isn't it, or a van or something.
Yeah.
And it's all about rubbish.
Yeah.
So there's nothing on the profile necessarily personal. I did try and add it. It didn't accept me as a friend. That obviously maybe it could see where I was working. And I did try ringing the number that you gave me, but again, he didn't answer to me either. The number seems to have been disconnected.
Oh.
Mm. Because when it rang and rang and rang, and I was like, oh, great, we're getting somewhere, it's going to ring. And it rang and rang and rang, and then eventually it said, this number is no longer in service. Which normally it wouldn't ring at all, you know. But I was surprised at that. So this guy, Paul Burke, he has a Facebook profile advertising that he does rubbish removal. Yeah. Your daughter got a fine. Actually, how did they get your daughter's name?
She was after pushing a form that she didn't need into one of the black bags that
okay.
I had thrown out.
Okay, so it was family rubbish, like it wasn't just hers. It was obviously from the household. And as far as you were concerned, you had contacted somebody legal, you had paid for it, and it was gone.
Yep.
And the next thing you got, that's fine. And have you any comeback on that, Lindsay?
No, I contacted the county hall where the fine originally came from. And the lady said, because I didn't see a permit or I didn't get a receipt for my money, that I'm liable to pay for the fine.
Oh, right, because you didn't get a receipt.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that was... I didn't know you had to get a receipt, actually. Now, I did go and look as well at the County Council website, Lindsay, and they have a list of all the permits that are there. And it's very interesting because I've definitely seen a lot more fellas going around in vans advertising rubbish collections than there are permits. I mean, I moved house while I was off on maternity leave, and the amount of fellas that came to the door when it was obvious there was rubbish out in our front yard offering to take it away for us. There's only 6 permits in the whole county council area. Only 6 have been issued, but I'd say 6 individuals came to our door separately offering to take away this rubbish. So there's an awful lot of people out there doing this. And I don't know, are they, like, obviously this guy was just taking your money and dumping it. I think some of them are going through it and seeing is there anything they can sell, which is probably fair enough, as long as they're disposing of it legally. But there's only 6, and they're mainly bigger bin companies. Healy's obviously comes under, I think Healy's comes under Country Clean. There's a few different names, we'll say. But basically, if an individual comes to your door or is advertising to do this, they probably can't do it, which I wasn't aware of, really. I thought that he would, you know, I thought that a lot of people had permits. So they've told you now at the County Council that you basically just have to pay this fine, you have to stump up.
Yeah, but you see, what I'm worried about now is they had only found 1 bag of rubbish in Shan Valley, and he took away about 10 to 12 bags from me.
Oh, crikey.
So I actually said to the lady in the County Hall, I said, does this mean now in another 2 months down the line I could get a fine in my own name? Mm. And she said, did you put letters in with... Now, I wouldn't normally. I'd burn my rubbish with any details like that on it. It was just my daughter had forgotten that time and threw it into the black bag.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have been like, if he was after saying on the phone, make sure there's no rubbish with names and addresses or details on it.
Yeah.
I would have done that. It was just a clear out that we'd done. And I went down and bought a skipper bag, as I said, and I filled it. Now, I expected him to come in kind of, you know, one of them vans that would lift the skipper bag into it.
Yeah.
He actually didn't. He came in a white Hi-Ace van, and he took out all the black bags out of the skipper bag.
And did the Hi-Ace have any, like, branding on it or writing on the side of it or anything?
No, nothing. No,
nothing. Okay.
Nothing. The van was actually half full of black bags of rubbish when he got to me. So he's obviously doing it a while, as I said. I just want to know, did anybody ever get a fine in the post, something come back from this man?
Yeah. Jesus, that's... So you're terrified. I mean, this could... So if it was 10 different bags, €150, that could be €1,500 in fines.
Yeah.
Oh, that is not what you signed up for at all.
No.
That's pretty stressful, isn't it?
That's what I said. You can't afford these fines. Like, €150 is a big chunk of money out of my wages every week.
Yeah. And you've absolutely no comeback. Is there anywhere you can report him to? Is that a criminal activity? Did the woman in the council tell you?
Being honest, she wasn't very pleasant to me on the phone. She just, that's what she gave me, is if I didn't see a permit or I didn't get a receipt, I'm liable to pay the fine. And I've 21 days to pay it, which 5 of those are gone now, so I've 16 days left.
Okay. So that's a sorry story, Lindsay.
Unfortunately.
Okay, I wonder, is there anybody else listening who this has happened to, and if they did have any redress? So, I mean, obviously, to be honest, at this stage, your most ideal form of redress is probably tracking down this fella and giving him a good going over, but that's probably not going to happen. And obviously, we don't recommend violence in 96FM. But I can imagine how you feel pretty violent about it. James is on the line and he wants to have a word as well. Just Mary has called in and said she won't go on air, but she says it's happening all over Cork and she says it's the travellers that are doing it. She's in North Cork. Lindsay, to your knowledge, was he a member of the travelling community?
No, he wouldn't have been. He was actually very well dressed.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Mary, therefore, it's not all the travellers that are doing it. Line four, James. Morning, James.
Good morning.
What's the story?
Seriously, look, I'm actually happy that you're highlighting this because this is the reason why all around the country, all around the county, our ditches, our streams, the rivers, the hedges are full of rubbish because people are paying people like this to come and do it. Honestly, Lindsay, what did you expect was going to happen? A fella turns up in a white van with no permit and he's well-dressed. Where do you think the stuff was going to go to?
Well, I would have assumed that he would have took it to the dump. I mean, what would it cost to take a van load of rubbish to the dump? He's still making a profit.
But they're not. There are companies out there who will do this. They have the permits. The numbers are written up on the side of all the vans or written up on the side of all the trucks. And these are the proper guys who make sure that the rubbish gets to the dump. The reason that the amount of cans and nappies and God knows what sort of stuff that's picked up by volunteers all around Cork City and County every weekend at risk of disease and injury to themselves is because people are paying fly-by-nights like this to come along and do stuff instead of going away and getting a proper company to do it. There are. If you pick up the paper tomorrow morning, if you pick up do a quick Google search for registered licensed companies with permits and pay them the money to do it, then this doesn't land on someone else's doorstep. I guarantee you that stuff arrived was probably outside somebody's door where there was kids playing or something. And it's
well,
not
actually,
on. It just isn't on.
I drove down to Shambali the other day, and it's actually a back road. There's a couple.
Yeah, and sure, back roads are fine. It doesn't matter what gets dumped there.
Yeah, it's actually, there's a couple of fences into farms where he could have dumped any of it, but why I'm ringing in is because why was it just one bag?
So where did the rest of it go?
If they came, like, if the county hall said to me that they had found all my rubbish and went through it and got my daughter's name out of it, that's fair enough. But now she told me that it was only one bag of rubbish that they found. So a couple of months down the line, we could come back here now again with another sign in the door.
I suppose, James, are you being fair to Lindsay?
100% fair. It's very, very simple. Like, the company's the permits, the numbers are written. You see the trucks on the road all the time with the numbers written on the side of them. If they don't have the numbers up, you don't use them.
Well,
this rubbish ended up in somebody's garden or in someone's land or on someone's farm or in someone's... And the rest, the state of... If you drive along any of the roads, especially the outskirts of any of the towns around Cork, it's a disgrace the amount of rubbish that's out there. Mm. And this is why it's there. Because people are too mean to spend a couple of euro to get the proper guy to do it.
Well, I think it would have been the same price, would it?
It's irrelevant. It's just... The people, it's not like there's no one there to do it. There are companies out there who are licensed, registered, do it properly, get the stuff to the dump properly, and it doesn't end up in someone else's land or in someone else's feet or the side of someone's road. I'll guarantee you, if you ask people this morning to send you the photographs of around their areas, you'll probably get hundreds of photographs in of rubbish dumped by the roadside. And it's coming from people who are being paid by people like Lindsay to do this.
Yes.
It's a no-brainer. It's money for nothing.
Are you a volunteer, James?
No. I unfortunately wouldn't have the time to do it, but I see a lot of volunteers and I know a lot of volunteers. Mm. There's Tidy Towns people that go out there on Saturday mornings. That they're risking life and limb sticking their hands into hedges as to what God knows what's going to be inside in this stuff.
Mm. But I suppose Lindsay's only trying to warn other people as well about this guy.
To be fair, but it sounds like she's more afraid of getting more fines than she is about warning. You have to learn a lesson from it. We all have to learn a lesson from it.
Mm. Well, yeah,
no,
I mean, that's
no
true.
Number on it, no permit.
Yeah.
They don't get it.
Yeah. James, fair point. Thank you.
Sure.
Lindsay, somebody wants to know, Geraldine texts in, why didn't you phone the number on the Skipo bag? Because don't they come and collect it for you?
I didn't take any notice, being honest. I just paid $9.99 down in the garage for the Skipo bag. And I was on going through my Facebook and a few people were after putting up that this boy collected any size Skipo bags for the one price.
So did other people have this up that you knew, was it?
Yeah.
Right. And have you heard back from any of them since?
Oh, no, I haven't. I heard back from a couple of people, all right. One man, actually, it's rubble and trees and things that he took away for him. And then another man, he actually took away his rubbish from outside his door. The man wasn't there. And he came back later on that evening for the money.
Okay. All right. So somebody else says here... another text, all of this illegal dumping is a direct result of a lot of people who cannot afford to pay the bills and are using rogue operators, while the owners of a waste firm in Cork City have their company registered in the British Virgin Islands and are protected by the government. I don't know if that's true, but I'm not going to name the company just in case it isn't. Councillor Tim Brosnan is on the line. He's a bit of advice to you. Lindsay, where in the city are you based?
Deer Park.
Deer Park. Okay, so you're over on the south side. So, Tim, she's not a constituent of yours, but you have some advice for her anyway.
Like, there's a facility out in the Kinsale Road civic community for people to take out refuse bags. And it costs about €20 to take out five full bags in a car. And if you take it out yourself, so she'd have saved herself €60, €150, and the cost of the skip-o bag and any future fine. Just take it to the old Kinsale Road dump. They're still taking household refuse there. And €20 you can take in five black bags.
€20. So Lindsay, for €40 you would have got rid of all of it.
I know.
And you know, it's illegal dumping is a major problem, and people think that I don't know. Deirdre, are people as aware of the facility to take the refuse to the dump? Like, you can take it out in your own car, drive in, and five bags, €20, you can dispose of it there. And a lot of the stuff. Some people think that, you know, they want to get away with everything. But this lady obviously thought she was doing the right thing and has got caught.
Yeah.
And people should just be aware of that. It's very cheap and easy to get rid of that.
Yeah.
And I've seen major problems around the city, particularly, you know, in the Ballyvillan area where the entrance to the Glen River Park from the North Ring Road is in an appalling condition.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd hold the civic authorities as responsible at this stage for not cleaning it out. And this whole debate about charging people, you know, for waste refuse, you know, the fixed charge is the way to go. That's the way it used to be. We had it that way with the city council, and there was a very comprehensive service given. But then the lefties started kicking up and they didn't want to pay service charges. So
was that not a Fianna Fáil Green government, Tim, that brought that in?
But in the charge pay by weight?
Yeah.
No.
Not a Fianna Fáil government, no?
The current government is the government that brought in pay by weight.
I seem to remember Socialist Party TD going to jail during Fianna Fáil government over bins.
That's because he wouldn't pay service charges.
Okay.
Service charges were a fixed charge.
Right.
Which the local authority levied.
But do you not think people should be rewarded for cutting down on waste?
Well, pay by weight isn't going to do that. The way to cut down on waste is to charge the people who manufacture the waste, which are the manufacturers, and force them into a situation, put a tax. Like, You have a facility where they introduced a facility where people could take waste back to the place where they got it. And then they introduced an outfit called Repack. So if the manufacturer now pays Repack a couple of bob, and they don't have to take the waste back. So that waste is in the open besides. Like, the way the Department of the Environment and the civil servants have handled this is lunatic.
Yeah.
And to be honest, the politicians aren't doing a very good job in it, and they're now creating another anti-water crisis through the bins. It should be a simple flat charge and the balance gets collected from the manufacturers.
Interesting idea. Thanks, Councillor Tim Brosnan, and thanks, Lindsay, for that. I'm going to have to take a break, guys. Lindsay, stay with me because I have another couple of callers on this, and we'll be back with Kate in just 1 second.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM. Text the Opinion Line now.
This is what you came for.
083-396-96-96. Cork's 96 FM.
Now, it's Deirdre here sitting in for PJ. I've been talking to Lindsay this morning, who used a guy to dump rubbish who turned out to be a con man. He dumped her rubbish somewhere out in the county, Shanbally, and she has got a fine for one bag of it. There are quite a number of other bags out there that she could potentially be liable to fines for, and unfortunately, unfortunately, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Unfortunately, if those bags are found, she will have to pay fines for them, and if they're identified with her. So what can be done about it? She just wanted to help make people aware. Now, I think Mary Jane reckons that our earlier caller, Lindsay, was being a bit unfair to you. I think James was his name. Mary Jane thinks he was being unfair. Do you think he was being unfair?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, he reckoned that this is why the dumping problem is so bad. I mean, I don't know that it is. I think a lot of people are actually engaged in illegal dumping on their own behalf. You did pay somebody.
Yeah, but that was my point. Like, I mean, you can pay anything from even 100 to 150 euro for somebody to come and take away your rubbish. Of course, you're going to take a bargain and pay someone 60 euro thinking that they're doing the same thing, taking it to the dump.
Mm. I suppose if it's too good to be true.
Yeah.
You know, there is a level of that.
No, I found out the hard way.
Yeah, yeah, true. Eugene says on Twitter as well, previously you could buy a bin tag for 7 euro or whatever and you didn't have to sign up to collection, they'd just collect the bag for you. Yeah, it was a bit more flexible, but there does seem to be a service, we talked about it on the show the other day, called collect.ie, which they do seem to do one-offs like that where you are doing a clear out or whatever, and you do have those skip-o bags with legitimate collectors as well. Kate is on the line about this. Hi, Kate.
Hi, if you notice the connection between when the bin charges came in and the dumping, you know, it got massive. I think that if the bin collection prices were much more reasonable, the amount of people then who would avail of it, is there anybody out there who would actually start up a company that's reasonable? You know, not extravagant. That people literally are cutting back on food when their bills come up.
See, you I know, suppose, Kate, crazy. Though, most of those services, they don't just pick up the rubbish and drop it off somewhere. Like, they have to process it.
Yeah, I know, but I just think that there's some of the bin charges are very high for people.
They are high. Yeah,
you know,
they are high.
And they're just gone, they're gone outrageous. There's no stop to it.
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I'm saying? Mm. We take ours to Raffine, you know, we take it over in the bags. You can do that like the one over in the Kinsale Road.
Yeah, and so do you have no bin collection then?
No, we got rid of it. We got rid of it when the county council, when the county hall left it.
Yeah, and does that mean, Kate, then, that like you're more inclined to buy things that have less? I'm obviously on this plastic-free thing.
What you do is you separate your stuff very well.
Yeah, and you're much more careful about it.
You have four proper plastic bags, and you have everything in the different bags. And it takes a few seconds. They're in the old bins. We never get back the bins.
Oh, of course.
Four big plastic bags, and we just then take them over, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Did you see the one this morning? There's a headline in a lot of the papers this morning about a woman in Dublin who is getting a fine now. What they've started doing in Dublin, and now this Greyhound crowd in Dublin, we seem to be lucky we don't have them in Cork because they seem to be very hard to deal with. This woman had four biscuits and a tea bag in her green bin. In her recycling bin, we'll say. And they're fining her.
Oh, for God's sake.
But it means that they can't recycle anything in the bin.
Yeah, and the same, somebody was saying a nappy can contaminate, I don't know how, oh my God.
I'd say a nappy could contaminate a truckload, depending on the child.
If it was my lot anyway, it was definitely very happy.
Snap.
Take care.
Thanks, bye-bye. Kate, bye. And Lindsay, look, thanks for the call, and hopefully people will be aware, this guy Paul Burke is a con man, and don't deal with him. Paul Burke, who is a picture of rubbish, there's lots of Paul Burkes out there, I'm sure the most of them are not con men, but this particular guy who collects rubbish does not have a permit. If you are getting rubbish collected by somebody, check, it's on the County Council website, check if they have a permit, because you will be saving yourself an awful lot of bother, or better yet, go to the dump yourself if you can. So thanks, Kate and Lindsay, for that. Kit is on the line about this as well. Hi, Kit.
You know, I was listening there and I think if it was advertised on a regular basis on the local radios, about where you can dispose of your rubbish for, as the guy said earlier on, for...
But sure, everybody knows the dump is there, Kit. I mean, come on, how much hand-holding do people need?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you need a bit of a reminder maybe that they're available, that they, more so now with the bins, you know, the increase down the road. I just think a reminder every so often, like you would hear, you know, you'd say, oh gosh, I didn't think of that, or I didn't do that.
Yeah.
I think it's a reminder now, especially now with the prices coming up, that people would remind them that this is another cheaper option, you know.
Going to the dump yourself and minimising your waste firstly, and then bringing what you have left to the dump does seem to be the cheapest option, really.
Yes, and for me personally, now, I would say if they were getting a reminder every so often on the radio about it, that they might say, you know, you'd be after forgetting about it when you're sort of used to doing your bins all the time.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough.
Yeah, it's a facility that is available, which is handy, you know, to
yeah.
use.
All right.
More so now.
Thanks
all right,
for that,
dear.
Kit.
All
Thank
right,
you.
Love. All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe more education around it. I don't know, though. Personally, I do think people know the dump is there. It's laziness a bit, you know. But equally, yeah, maybe it is a case. Maybe some people didn't know that you could go to the dump yourself. Aidan says, don't forget, fly tipping is rife. Others dumping rubbish in your bin overnight. You could get done for if something was put in the wrong bin. That is very true, Aidan. That's a good point. You'd want padlocks on your bins, which I have seen a lot of places. Now, I need to apologise to Mary. She's been waiting on the line for ages. Mary, good morning. Hello, Mary.
Hi, Deirdre. How
Hi,
are you?
Hi, Mary. I'm sorry
Good
for
morning.
Keeping you waiting. We had more calls than that than I expected.
Okay.
Now, Mary, your son Declan contacted us earlier in the week about the cancer drug. Am I pronouncing this right? Palbociclib.
That's right.
Right. So,
it's
Mary...
It's a cancer drug, especially for breast cancer and secondary breast cancer.
Okay. And you're on this?
I am.
And what kind of cancer have you?
I was diagnosed during the month of July, in order that I was able to get it. But come the 1st of August, the government are withdrawing funding from it because it's too expensive, if you don't mind.
Oh, okay. So, all right. Yes. Rewind a small bit here, Mary. So, okay. Declan contacted us about this drug. You've been battling cancer for a while now. You weren't just diagnosed with cancer full stop in July. You've had
no.
other forms.
No. 10 years ago, I had a double mastectomy. And then I was doing fine until about last November, 12 months. And I got this awful chest infection that I couldn't shift. I was very breathless and I couldn't walk. I least little thing and I'd be breathless, even doing housework. Mm. And I knew something wasn't right and they sent me for an X-ray. And then the X-ray results showed fluid on the lung. So then they treated me for pneumonia, my GPs that mm-hmm. I was attending at that time. And then on and on again, I had a series of 3 x-rays and all 3 of them showed fluid on the lung and there was no improvement in any one of them. And then I insisted with my GP that I knew myself something wasn't right and I insisted on an appointment with my oncologist, Dr. Bulger, who was in Tullamore at the time, and because I had been with him during my breast cancer treatment previously, and he eventually got the appointment with Dr. Bulger. But in the meantime, X-ray department had to recommend a CT scan, and the CT scan showed concerns that my GP didn't read into, and also the radiologist that done the CT scan recommended that I should see a physician instead of an oncologist.
Mm.
Now that was outrageous to me, and my present GP now, who I'm going to, and oncology nurses even said they could not read that letter without having concerns, and yet the radiologist got away with it. But anyway, I was diagnosed with metastatic cancer of the lungs, lymph nodes and bones last August. And there in last month, I was diagnosed that the metastatic cancer had spread to my liver. And then the oncologist in Tullamore recommended that I go on this treatment. And I was lucky to be in time before the 1st of August, or otherwise I would have to go through the intravenous chemo and not
right.
have the tablet.
So this drug is an alternative to chemo?
It is.
Wow, and I mean, anybody who knows someone who's been through chemo knows you really don't
Absolutely.
Want to have to do that.
Yeah.
So,
and you take it for 21 days in conjunction with a hormone tablet.
Yeah.
Because my liver cancer, through the biopsy results, showed it was very female. So it had to be... It was thriving on estrogen, so it had to be taken in conjunction with Arimidex, a hormone tablet.
Okay. So you're on this drug now. Is it working?
On this drug, I take it for 3 weeks and off for 1 week, and that's the pattern of the rest of my life.
And is it doing what it's supposed to do?
Pardon?
Is it doing what it's supposed to do?
Well, I just started yesterday, so
okay.
it's a bit early, but hopefully it will, please
yeah.
God.
So you started on the 13th of July, but if you had been diagnosed 3 weeks later, you wouldn't have got
yes.
it.
Yes, No, I would not.
And why is that?
Because the government are withdrawing funding because it's too expensive. Yet it has brilliant results.
Gosh.
The government are getting away with what they like, but they're very generous to themselves in handing out big pay rises.
Mm. How much does the drug cost?
Well, I don't know, but if a session of chemo costs 10,000, supposed to be, this is obviously way dearer.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's...
But person's health comes first.
It does, of course, yeah.
Let them do away with their own expenses.
Well,
politicians' expenses and reduce their pay cuts,
yeah,
and look after the people.
Yeah. So I wonder, could we find out, Fergal, how much that drug is? Because I suppose if the session of chemo is 10,000, I didn't know that. That's one politician's expenses.
Now. I can't guarantee that.
Yeah. 93,000, I'm told, for a course. So that's 93,000 for 21 days. That's a TD's really? Wages. But that's one TD's wages. And we've 158 TDs. So if you got rid of
and
all the TDs...
And senators and all that we don't need.
If you got rid of all the TDs, you could pay for this for how long? A couple of years for you.
Yeah.
But not for all the other people.
No.
For one person, we'd say. Getting rid of all the TDs will pay
but
for this drug for a couple of years for one person.
People's lives much easier.
Oh, no, absolutely. But what I'm saying is I don't think the amounts match.
Mm. Well, they should be doing something to help the people. Mm.
Declan made the point in his email. I have his email here, and he made some really interesting points in it, actually. He said... the HSE wants to make available certain drugs, but they cannot fund them. I read there is 10 critical new medicines currently badly delayed for patients who need them. They include the drug Erivedge, made by the pharmaceutical company Roche, which treats patients for advanced skin cancer. Also the drug Entresto, made by Novartis, which treats patients for heart failure and can reduce the risk of death from the condition. Brintellix, manufactured by Lundbeck to treat depression, has also been... on the list by the HSE. The drugs have passed all stages of assessment, including agreed price, but the HSE cannot afford to pay for them from its own budget and needs the Department of Health to make a case for extra funding. So they're talking about, at the moment, the government are talking about this fiscal space crack, and Leo Varadkar saying we need to invest in more infrastructure and all this. But, yes, you know, but you would make the argument, Mary, obviously, that this is where the money should be going.
Yeah.
When the cystic fibrosis drugs Orkambi and Kalydeco got the all clear, but only after a long campaign by patients and protracted price negotiations with Vertex. And I think, you know, Declan is saying basically these got the all clear, so now the likes of your one isn't going to.
Well, not by the looks of things now from the 1st of August.
Yeah. Said, you know, so in order for some lives to be saved, so there's however many CF patients being saved by Kalydeco and Orkambi, then people like you, but who are diagnosed a month later, will not get this drug.
No.
So it's playing people off against each other, Mary, really, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And I got on to Joe Duffy. I got on to Mary McCallaghan. Mind you, she didn't return my call.
Mm.
I got on to RTE News and TV3 News. And none of them took it up.
And well, Mary, aren't you lucky you found us?
And through Declan.
Yeah.
And what was I going to say? I got on to my local TD and he is doing it, the Sinn Féin TD, Brian Stanley.
Right.
Who's the only TD that does anything for Leigh Shafley.
Yeah.
Constituents.
God, so you've really been around the houses with this. And nobody's interested.
No, I didn't get around the house. I just wasn't up to...
Sorry, I mean with the media. You've been around the block with it and nobody's interested.
TV3, and no one has any interest in it.
So, and I mean, you're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
You're getting it.
I'm getting it.
And so anybody, you know what, it's like one of these things, Mary, we always notice that the government will make an announcement about something this week, but because the thing isn't going to affect anyone for a year, nobody protests. And then in a year's time, people say, hang on, when did they take this off me?
Look at all the thousands of people, and cancer is getting so common.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All the people who will be diagnosed who don't know it yet.
Yeah, and I wouldn't wish intravenous chemo on anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a horrible, horrible
it's
thing.
It's grueling, as Christy Dignam said the other night.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Eugene says on Twitter...
things easier for people, why not use it? It's hard enough to say, I'm on chemo for life and I'll still never be cured.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a hard road. Eugene says on Twitter, Shane Ross thinks we can host the Olympics, but then the HSE says this drug is too dear. Yeah, Eugene, you're spot on. Shane Ross and the Olympics. I really wonder what planet that man lives on. Yeah. I thought it was the most ridiculous comment. So, Mary, God, this drug is made in Ring of Skiddy, by the way.
You're serious?
Yeah, so we've listeners probably listening now who are making this at the moment.
Right.
But I don't know, would they be making it too long if there's no market for it in Ireland?
No.
So Declan said to us, budgets come first and people's health second. There will always be money to pay for their obscene salaries and pensions and to hell with people's health.
People's health is way down the line as far as I can see.
Mm. And he says, when a natural disaster happens, we send millions in aid. Unfortunately, these things happen and people die, but we should look after our own first.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, Mary. Look, you've raised that. You've brought it to public attention. Thank you for taking the call this morning.
Okay.
And hopefully there will be somebody to come back out of it. Let us know how you get on with the TD and if it gets raised in the Dáil.
Yeah, I will indeed.
Okay, take care. And Mary, best luck with your treatment. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's a bit of a scary situation, isn't it? So it doesn't affect Mary. In fairness to her, she's very selfless to come out about it because it doesn't affect her. She's getting the drug. But, you know, you or your mother or your father or your wife or your sister or brother or whoever could be dealing with this cancer in a month's time, and you don't know it yet, it could be any of us, but you won't get this drug. You'll have to have intravenous chemo instead. And it's a bit scary. I mean, Kev says it's not as if the HSE budget is small. It's not. There's obscene waste within it. Conflating foreign aid is ignorant at best. It's always a question with the foreign aid, Kev, isn't it? That people do say we should look after our own first. And, you know, if it was your mother or my mother, I know what I'd be saying too. But I suppose it's not like they're not going to get cancer treatment. I suppose that's the difference. It's the difference between, you know, it's not a life and death matter. It's a question of somebody's comfort and how easy their treatment is rather than having chemo, which is very, very, very difficult, intravenous chemo particularly. If you want to come back on that, you can text or WhatsApp the show on 083-396-9696 or, of course, you can call on 1850-715-996. I'm sure there are lots of people listening who will be familiar with or will have been on that drug and might have some thoughts on it. I know we've spoken to people before who had muscular multiple sclerosis, who have recently had a very expensive drug cleared for that as well. And obviously Orkambi and Kalydeco for CF sufferers, those have been, those ones have also been in the news a lot. I guess as well, the difference between those and the ones Mary's talking about is those are life or death drugs. Kalydeco or Orkambi will save your life in the absence of something else. And so will that MS drug, which I can't remember the name of. Maybe this one is about your comfort. You know, so it's about getting a painkiller versus no painkiller, or it's about not going through the horrendous side effects of chemo if you don't have to if you have this drug. And that's worth a lot to people because God knows I've seen it in my own family, people suffering awfully from chemo. Anyway, a totally different topic in a moment. Councillor Terry Shannon is on the line. We were speaking to, I think his name was Declan yesterday, who was ticketed down at, after a minor match in Porky Ring. He was furious. He was ticketed at 8 p.m. I don't know where I got Declan. Finbar was ticketed at 8 p.m. down at Porky Ring. He felt it was totally unacceptable that time of the evening. Yes, it was a double yellow, but, you know, it wasn't a busy time. Councillor Terry Shannon represents that area, of course, and he has some stuff to say about this. So I'll talk to him in just a moment. If you're down there, actually, and you were around for that minor match, or you're down there and you're going to be around for the matches in the new super duper improved Porky Queeve, I want to know how you feel about it. Are you a bit trepidatious, might be the word, about how Porky Queeve is going to affect you? I've seen stuff in the papers and I heard Peter Horgan from the Labour Party talking about it. The residents appear to be very concerned that there is no plan for what happens when all these thousands of hordes descend on Porky Queeve. And obviously they've dealt with it before, but with this new super duper stadium, presumably there will be more people and it will be busier and all of that, and there's no plan. But we'll stick with Porky Ring for the moment, just coming in one moment.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
The Big Drive Home with Wayne Hilton. Cork's 96 FM.
bring you the very latest Cork news from around the world, trending celebrity news. If you're out and about, all your essential Cork travel news, then I could be giving you the best news as I make lots of €1,000 cash calls. Join me weekday afternoons from 4 as we go home together and play Cork's biggest hits with the best variety.
Wayne Hilton, weekdays 4 p.m.
With the new Peugeot 3008 SUV, European Car of the Year 2017. Never has an SUV gone so far.
Cork's 96 FM. Call the opinion line.
This is what you came for.
1850-715-996. Cork's 96 FM.
Now, talking about parking over there on the south side, down around Black Rock, Ballinlock, all those places that are really badly affected every time there is a match or an event on in Páirc Uí Chaoimh or actually Páirc Uí Chaoimh. They're kind of a, you know, sometimes the more amenities you have, the worse that works out for you. Isn't that right, Terry? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Terry. How are you?
Nice to talk to you, Deirdre. How are you?
You too. The more amenities you have, sometimes the worse off you are.
Well, as long as you're properly organised and managed, the facilities are great, quite honestly. But certainly, from our point of view, with the reopening of Páirc Uí Chaoimh, it's important that we get things right. Now, as part of the conditions of planning for Páirc Uí Chaoimh, there has to be a mobility plan in place. Indeed, they have to have a mobility manager in place, so that for every match and every event that will happen in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, there has to be a traffic management plan. Mm. And that is part of the conditions of planning. I've asked our director of service to ensure that that's in place, and they are talking to Páirc Uí Chaoimh about that. So I will be expecting that to happen. Now, that will be in conjunction with the local Gardaí as well. So that's, you know, and part of that possibly and hopefully will be park and ride as well, whereby people won't necessarily drive as close to the stadium as they possibly can and then abandon their car and walk the rest of the way.
You know, where would the park and ride go from, Terry?
Oh, the Black Ash.
Oh, right, okay.
That's where the park and ride is. So, for instance, if you're coming to the tunnel from, say, Tipperary, for want of a better word, you're coming to a match, then you'll be diverted down to the Kinsale Road roundabout, down into the Black Ash, and you'll be bussed up to Páirc Uí Chaoimh from there. And that's quite normal in many stadia, not alone around the world, but actually, I mean, you can park right outside Croke Park in Dublin. Mm. There are barriers well back, and the guards divert traffic to ensure that, you know, what's happening at present, where I'm chairman of the Ballinlock Community Association, and it regularly comes up at our meetings, where the parish is on lockdown for the period of the matches. Now, people will say to you, well, it's only for a couple of hours, and that's true. The difficulty is, though, if an emergency happens within those number of hours, you know, a tragedy could happen.
Yeah.
And we'll be wringing our hands then, oh God, we should have done something.
Yeah.
And the parking, particularly at the minor match, there was 8,000 people at the minor match, was appalling. I mean, I took a photograph of Ardmahan Estate, for instance, the main thoroughfare up to the old Lovett's restaurant, and the manner in which those cars were parked, indeed abandoned, would mean that no emergency service vehicle could get up there. Nobody, you know. And that's not good enough. So, you know, while I sympathise with people who got tickets, you're going to get more. And if you park in a WLA line, no matter where you are, you're going to get a ticket.
Or no matter what time of day it is.
Because, and this isn't just a matter for the GA. Of course, it is a matter for them. But people who drive know whether they're parking properly or not. And just because you're going to a match and just because there's so many other cars around you doing it doesn't mean that you can park on a footpath or that you can park in a green area or indeed park in front of driveways.
Yeah.
You know, there's one particular park in my ward where, you know, the residents look after the area well. They have a lovely flower bed. People parked on it. And the residents were told that to do it themselves when they remonstrated with these motorists.
Did people get angsty with them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. One resident was told about themselves. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's charming.
And that's not good enough. And so the point I'm making, I mean, we want people to enjoy themselves, whether they're Cork people going to the matches or people coming into Cork or indeed people going to the concerts that will be happening in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. We have no issue there. But we want to ensure that the whole area of Black Rock and Ballintemple and Ballinlock isn't on lockdown for the period of these matches. And so
yeah, well, the thing is, as you say, Terry, like, there's matches, but there's also going to be concerts and whatever other kind of things on.
And
it could be for the whole summer, like, a lot of the time.
Well, I don't imagine there'll be that many concerts down in Parkeighcleave. But
well, if Ed Sheeran had his way, he'd be there every night for the whole summer, Terry.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with that as long as it's run properly. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I supported the whole redevelopment of Parkeighcleave. Mm. You know, there was a lot of people opposed to it, but I made the point to residents, look, this now is an opportunity to actually get involved because the traffic was the big issue always. This was an opportunity now for us to get involved and to actually have a say in how the traffic is managed. So that's why we insisted, as part of the conditions of planning, that a traffic management plan for each of the matches and each of the events was in place. And I'll be insisting that that is the case. I mean, it cannot now be brushed over. Mm. The development, I mean, there was only 8,000 at the minor match. There could be anything up to 45,000 people at matches going forward in Parkeighcleave. And so that's welcome to the area in terms of business and that. But yeah, we need to do it in a managed manner so that people have the ability to get in and out of their homes, enjoy the amenity of their homes, but do so in a safe manner.
In 30 seconds, Terry, somebody wants to know about the pollution of the Atlantic Pond as reported yesterday's Irish Examiner.
Yeah, look, your difficulty with the Atlantic Pond is that there are unknown pipes and that still draining into the Atlantic Pond. The Atlantic Pond was developed in the Victorian era as a cesspit. That's what it came from. Now, we redeveloped it over the years as a lovely amenity, but there are still pipes coming in that are we can source them, and there's been a lot of work to try and source them, and they're continuing to do that. And so that's the difficulty there. Plus, there's algae with the hot weather as well. It's an ongoing battle we have with the Atlantic Pond, and we have redeveloped it on a number of occasions. And some people would feel that maybe it's something to do with the redevelopment of Parkeighcleave. I don't know that, but I know it was raised at council last Monday night, and our Environment Department are working on it to try and great resolve stuff. That issue. It is a lovely amenity. Yeah. I walked myself, and we want to keep it that way. But there are
thanks, Terry. I'm going to have to cut you off because I have to go to news. Fine. But thanks for that.
You're listening to a repeat of the 96FM Opinion Line. Phone and text lines are now closed. The Opinion Line with PJ Coogan. 1850-715-996.
Now, I mentioned just before the news at 10 that I have a lovely competition for you today, and I do. It's a summer's evening on the quad with Ronan Tynan and Fiona Murphy and Karen Underwood at UCC on tomorrow night, Saturday the 15th of July, and it's in aid of local charities as it is every year. There's going to be some beautiful performances at this, musical classics by some of Ireland's finest voices, backed by the Garda Band and the chorus of Cork Operatic Society, and it is, of course, in a magical setting. The quad is absolutely beautiful. Tickets are available from UCC Visitor Centre, Enable Ireland, Pieta House and Cork Deaf Enterprises. See summeronquad.ucc.ie for more. We have three prizes to give away. Each prize is a pair of concert tickets plus, not just the concert, an invitation for two to attend a private pre-concert drinks and canapes reception hosted by the Riverlea Hotel. That sounds very posh indeed. So if you want to win, it's very simple. It's a text competition, text or WhatsApp 083-396-9696 with your name and the answer to this very, very difficult question. Where is the quad? I know, it's Friday, I shouldn't be taxing you. Where is the quad? 083-396-9696. Please include your name. If you want to include gratuitous compliments to me, Brenda Fergal, or indeed Richard, who is here picking the winners, feel free, it's Friday. But obviously no preference will be shown and all entries will be randomly selected by Richard. He's very serious about these things. So where is the quad? 083-396-9696 to win a pair of concert tickets plus an invitation for two to attend a private pre-concert drinks and canapes reception hosted by the Riverlea Hotel, and I will announce the winners before the end of the show. So get texting, and that's always a lovely event every year. Really, really nice, and lovely to have it outdoors on, certainly in this nice weather that we're getting. So I hope everybody goes to that, enjoys it. Now, something completely different. We were talking about a rubbish scam earlier, and now it's another scam. Scams left, right and centre these days. You really do not know who to trust. Mark is on the line to tell us about the latest scam. I'm just going to hang up on line one, guys, sorry. Mark, tell me, what happened to you?
Hello.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad at all. You contacted us the other day to bring something to our attention. Tell me what happened to you.
Well, I went online and there was a company called Loxie Smile. Now, they're kind of like clip-on veneers. They're a new thing that are out, you know? Mm-hmm. I emailed them and they said that they'll send an agent to me. So this is about a month ago, just over a month ago. So the agent contacted me, came out to my house, just took impressions of my teeth, just to send them away. Now, he said it would take between 2 and 3 weeks. So after the three weeks, I tried to contact them. So by email, I heard nothing. So they had a Facebook page and went on to that. So they were giving me the runaround for days on end, saying that the molds weren't good enough and this, that, the other thing. So I tried to contact the agent, and his phone was off. Now, I was getting nowhere with them. I asked someone to phone me. Nobody phoned me. So, like, as I said, it's ongoing still. The company have been contacting me through Facebook, but I've asked them so many times to phone me, but nobody seems to phone me. I've tried to phone their offices in London, tried to phone them in Dublin, and it just keeps going through a voicemail. And I still haven't spoken to actually anybody from the company itself. So they have been in contact. I won't say they haven't been. Mm-hmm. But as I said, when it comes to something like this, it was 500 euro and I handed over to this guy. Now, they have told me on Facebook that the agent has gone rogue and he's disappeared with a substantial amount of money.
This guy that came to your house?
Yeah.
And was he, now, not wishing to identify anybody at all, so don't name anybody, but was he from Cork?
No, he's from Dublin.
He's from Dublin. And would he have said that he had travelled from Dublin to meet you?
He said that he travels all over the country doing different impressions and stuff like that. So he basically said that he was in Waterford and then he was in Clonmel, so he made it out to me. As I said, he had all his bag and his ID and everything, stuff like that with him. Now, he said to me he didn't have a receipt book. Now I said to him, I said, look, I'm not handing over money unless I get a receipt. So I made him write one out for me. And I asked him to post me a proper receipt. So the actual receipt came in the door, so I had proof that...
So you got a receipt in the post as well?
I got a receipt, yeah. Okay. But as I said, subsequently, since all this, the guy supposedly has gone rogue and he's just doing a certain amount of work for them and not handing over the cash, you know. So, like, it is a substantial amount of money if you're dealing with one person. It's 500 euro, you know. So, like, if he's dealing with 10 people a day, you know, you're talking about 5 grand, you know. So,
but I mean, that's their problem, it's not your problem.
That's exactly, that's what I tried to say to them. And they've said to me on Facebook that they're the victims here, you know. I said, you're supposedly a large company. I said, I'm just a normal Joe Soap, and you're telling me that you're the victim. I said, I don't understand that. Now, subsequently, as I said, I've been trying to contact people. I tried to phone them, phone the two different numbers. Now, I've kind of done some research on Facebook myself, and you can actually type in the name and certain other things, and it will pop up. So there has been other people advertising this company. No, right. I won't mention any names.
People
such,
saying that they've been done the same way you have.
No, there's no previous that. People are advertising that they do what the other agent did. So I've contacted, there was one lady on Facebook I contacted and said, do you work for this company? She says, yeah, I explained the situation. She was very apologetic. And I told her I just wanted to get a refund. Now, when I explained to her that's like I use credit union account, my partner uses the bank account. So I said, look, I gave him my partner's bank account and details that she said she'd get a refund to me. Now, when I told her that it was my partner's account, she just called me an effing clown and to grow up. And she said, who do I think I'm kidding? And then she blocked me. So I kind of dumbfounded at that, you know. So I tried to contact 3 or 4 other different people. That now, supposedly they don't work for the company. What they do is a subcontract. So they might have petitions, they might have even a dentist practice, and they'll get the stuff from this company. They don't actually work directly for them. They subcontract for them. I've gotten nowhere as such from any of it, you know.
Okay, so you're out of pocket 500 euro. The company in London and Dublin. Now, I tried calling them as well, Mark, on your behalf, and no answer. Tried again and again. I tried a number of times and no answer at all. I did contact them on Facebook. I got no reply. So I mean, they do seem to be a real company. They have an address in London.
That's what I'm saying. They seem to be a real company.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't understand how that lady that I spoke to was so apologetic. And then when she asked my bank details, she just turned nasty.
Did she think you were some kind of a scammer because you had no bank account?
I got no idea. I actually took a picture of the receipt that I had and a picture of the written receipt that I made the guy write up for me. And I sent it to her, you know. Now the company aren't saying that I didn't pay. So I'm baffled about what she was kind of playing at, you know what I mean?
And was she in Ireland?
She's in Dublin, yeah.
She's in Dublin, okay. Off air, Mark, we might see, can we get contact details for her from you? Even if you've just a Facebook page, we can try, the research team here can try and contact her and just see, maybe she thought you weren't legit either. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to suspect people on Facebook, particularly these days. You're the second person to fall victim to something advertised on Facebook, that, you know, on the show even today. But this is a real company, as I said. They do have phone numbers, they're just not being answered. You got a receipt in the post, and did the receipt have the logos and all that sort of stuff on it?
Yeah, did it.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're not an idiot. You got your receipt. You were making sure you got it. That should be some sort of proof of a legal contract that you had with them.
Of course, yeah.
And nothing. Have you been to a solicitor about it?
Not yet, no, I haven't. Mm-hmm. It's still kind of ongoing, you know.
Yeah.
So I spoke to another, I tracked down three people that advertised this company to say that they obviously subcontracted for them. And I contacted another lady actually just this morning. And she phoned me, she seemed kind of very apologetic, and she said that she's going to get to the bottom of it. Now, I hope she doesn't turn around like the other lady did, but this lady seems to be a nice lady, and she said that she works for herself, but she deals with this company to get the product, you know, so
right.
She said that she'll try and get to the bottom of it. Now, hopefully she can do something about it, because as I said to her, I said, look, I've been contacted by through Facebook. I said I've asked for nearly for 2 or 3 weeks for somebody to phone me, you know.
Yeah.
I said, because I don't want to be speaking to a robot. I want to be speaking to an actual person, you know, because it's I think it's disgraceful to carry on from a company, you know. If their agent goes rogue, that's not my issue. It's not my problem.
No, it is not.
That's theirs, you know. So
I mean, presumably I guess he's not an employee because. As you say, these people seem to be kind of subcontracted. But I would imagine most companies have some kind of insurance that covers them if somebody does do this and leave them in the hole for that money. That's your phone ringing, Mark. I'd say someone's telling you you're on the radio. Okay, so Mark, if anyone listening has encountered this crowd at all, please let us know. 0833 96 96 96 or 1857 15996. Mark, we will, off air, we'll get some more details from you of that other lady and try and contact her. But one of the things, so Mark, thanks for that. And and just stay there, and Brendan Fergal will speak to you. One of the things that intrigued me about this was the idea of clip-on veneers is a new one on me. I had never heard of them. So we rang Morris from Riverside Dental Care. Morning, Morris.
Good morning. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
What? I'm great. What is? But I'm a bit confused. What is a clip-on veneer?
Yes, these are kind of a fashion item, I suppose. In one sense, they're like an instant quick fix to in certain cases for teeth. But if I could just go back to your caller, I have never heard of anybody coming to the house to take impressions for something. It's smacks of incredibly, I don't know how they're getting away with it.
How does that work, making impressions?
Well, I mean, taking impressions, Jesus, I mean, we would have practiced for many, many years as undergraduates to take an impression. You know, it's making a mold of your teeth. And even after 30 years in practice, I mean, my colleagues and I would often have to retake an impression 2 or 3 times to get a perfect mold, you know, in certain circumstances. So I find it very hard to understand how an agent who has probably no dental experience at all can come along and take an impression that would be of benefit to anybody getting these veneers, you know. So if I could explain what they are, really, if you could picture taking a mold of your teeth, making a plaster cast of it, and then simply covering that cast with a line like a gum shield for all the world, except that gum shield would look like teeth. And that's what it is.
Okay.
So it's temporary. You can't eat with it. You can't drink with it, I would imagine. I'd say you probably can't kiss with it either. So I don't see the benefit, apart from maybe somebody who wants an instant quick fix, maybe for a wedding or something like that. But they're very impractical, you know, and they're not a permanent solution in any shape or form.
Can you eat with them?
No. No.
So you can't eat, you can't kiss anyone?
No.
Like, I'd be under the impression they were just for selfies, except for there's an app for that. I mean, surely you can fix your teeth with the phone.
You're not far off the mark there. Now, the only time really where I could see them being of benefit would be if somebody, say, for example, had quite badly broken down teeth, maybe after an accident or something like that, or maybe in cases where you would have patients would have gross decay for a variety of reasons, and you want to kind of to give them an idea of the way a full mouth restoration would work. You could get a mold like this made, but you would obviously send that to a recognized laboratory to do this.
Yeah.
You know.
An ordinary dentist can't even really do this, can they?
Well, you would, yeah. I mean, you would have a... I mean, I would... Most guys would actually go in here, and you could take an impression. You can adjust the model with some filling material, and you can actually do a mold of that, and you can pop it into the patient's mouth and give them a preview. You know, you can do this. Like this, the dentist will do this, no problem. Or in cases like that, where you can take the model and you can recommend to a technician, you can say, look, I'd like this filled out here, I'd like that moved here, and they will send you back a very accurate mock-up of potentially what you can do for a patient, you know? Mm. And in those circumstances, it's fantastic. But it is temporary. It is temporary, you know? And I just looked into the website there. It's very plausible. It's you know, you've got these lovely white teeth looking out at you.
Yeah.
It's a very simple, quick fix. You know, but unfortunately, you know, people like poor old Mark there, like, you know, he's looking maybe for, you know, something inexpensive, something maybe for a variety of reasons, you know, to quick fix something or to give him a smile. And unfortunately, you know, he's been cut out. But I'm not quite certain that it would have solved his problem anyway, you know, judging by what I'm reading on the website, you know.
Yeah.
I think
would that be an expensive price? 500? I'm not sure 500 is even the full price. That was obviously the price for either a deposit or a first payment or whatever.
I would have no idea. I mean, I think anything like this, it looks like a very quick fix to me.
Mm.
It looks like something. I mean, it's not that far away from going in and getting a mold of a gum shield inside in a shop and putting it into boiling water and putting it into your mouth, really, do you know, and except it has teeth on it.
Cheapers.
Do you know what I mean? It's not.
It's not a solution, really. I mean, it might be a cheaper alternative to veneers, but it's not an alternative to veneers,
at
really, at all.
By no means. By no means. It's
and how much is a full mouth of veneers?
Oh, God, I wouldn't have a clue. I wouldn't have a notion. I mean, every case would be totally different, you know. You could never, I mean, you could have veneers, you could have a full mouth full of veneers going from €10,000 to €40,000, you know. I mean, that's like saying I have a leak in my sink here, how much is it going to cost me, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. But like, it's certainly not going to be anything near €500.
Oh, not at all. Yeah. Not at all, you know.
Right.
I mean, you'd be looking at multiples of 500, really, you know.
Yeah.
But it depends on how far you want to go. I mean, I would advise Mark to go along to his own dentist and have a chat with him, you know, see what he can be done. He's more than welcome to come down here to me. We'd be quite happy to see him and see, can we offer him some alternatives, you know?
Yeah.
And what I'd be prepared to do, because I hate seeing people like that ripped off, and it's kind of just... We need to get the message out to the public, really, that, you know, nothing comes cheap, really, where your health is concerned, you know, or where dentistry is concerned in particular, you know. So, I mean, if you want to, I'd be quite happy to see Mark. And if he doesn't get his refund of €500, I'd be prepared to offer him €500 worth of treatment.
Oh, that's very good of you, Mark.
All right.
That's very good of you. Thanks a million.
No,
we'll relay that, and thank you. Okay. So those cheap veneers, thanks, Mark. Thanks, Mars. Veneers that are, they're basically cheap veneers, but they're not veneers at all. It's like a gum shield. Don't buy them. They just sound ridiculous. In fairness, I can understand why people would be desperate, because it's really, really expensive to get anything done with your teeth, particularly if you do have a whole mouthful of problem teeth. But that is not the answer, particularly if they're on Facebook and you don't go to an office or a premises or somewhere that isn't going to disappear the next day. That's an awful story, really. So Mark is €500 out of pocket. The company does seem to exist, we just can't contact them. If anybody has dealt with them or contacted them or had anything to do with them, Luxie Smile is the name of them, Luxismile. Please give us a shout, 0833 96 96 96 or 1850 715 996. And thanks to Morris from Riverside Dental, who has very kindly offered to help Mark out just a little bit by giving him €500 worth of free treatment if he can't get that refund. Look, something something for his trouble and for all the aggro he's been through. Won't make up for it, but it's still something. Something completely different in a minute. What are they allowed to ask you in a job interview? Because Sharon contacted us. We put this up on Facebook earlier in the week, and she was asked a question that I personally thought was illegal. But maybe in the context, is it still illegal? It was a childcare setting. She was asked, does she have any children? And what would she do if they got sick? 083 396 96 96 1850 715 996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
Text the Opinion Line now. This is what you came for. 083-396-96-96. Cork's 96 FM.
Now, Sharon contacted us during the week pretty upset after a job interview in which she was asked, what would she do if her children got sick? Are they allowed to ask you that at a job interview? And what happens if they do? Are you allowed not answer it? Sharon says, I was interviewed by a male. I feel as if it had been a female interviewer, they wouldn't have asked me this. And she didn't get the job. Frederick contacted us on Facebook about this. Hi, Frederick.
Hey, I'm good.
How are you? What do you think of this?
It happens all the time. It's been happening for the last couple of years. Like, I mean, it's not a colour thing. It's not a country thing. It's more of a culture thing that people have been putting up in this country for a long, long time. You know what I mean? Like, it's got to do with your address as well. Like, and I've experienced that now a couple of times. Like, if you're living in a particular area, you have a particular address, your CV is the same. Like, you know, nobody calls you, nobody rings you. But if you change your address and all of a sudden you're in a good area, the floodgates are open and everybody wants you. Do you know what I mean? Like,
really?
It happens. Big time. Big time.
And you've experienced this yourself, have you?
On two separate occasions, and in fact, only a couple of months recently.
So, like, where were you living before and where are you now?
Because I was living in the north side, like, and then I put down a different address, like, in the county, and boom, straight away I was getting emails left, right and centre. Can you do this? When can I talk to you? Are you around later? Can I ring you? Oh, yeah. It was
really?
Like they were, falling over themselves. Like, it was crazy. I couldn't choose. Like, yeah, that's what. And the CV stayed exactly the same.
So you think discrimination is rife?
It's rife. I mean, even when I was going to school in the 90s, I mean, I had a fella next to me. Like, oh, it's not what you know, it's who you know. If you play for a particular team or whatever, oh, we'll hire you, whatever. If you're playing for Cork or whatever, we'll hire you, whatever. We'll make you sell more cars because you're famous and all this and all that. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, if you have, you know, a restaurant or whatever, and you're hiring two waitresses, and one dresses a bit more eye-catching than the other, and they're both the same, well, then you know who you're going to pick. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know.
And do you think having children is a reason that employers wouldn't employ somebody?
I don't know. Well, there's ways and means around it. I mean, they have ways and means around it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, oh, because you have kids, no, we're going to da-da-da-da-da-da-da. They can't do that, like. You know what I mean? There's words in the English language and there's loops around the discrimination.
Do you think in an interview, I mean, if they establish it in an interview that you have kids versus the other candidate who doesn't, well, you know the other candidate will take the overtime. Well,
might. Oh, no, they just turn around and say to you, oh, sure, look, we have other people there to interview, whatever, and we'll ring in to let you know in due course. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, they'd be saying things like that to you. Do you know what I mean? Oh, we've other people know whatever. Oh, it's a very competitive job. Though there's 10 other people you've interviewed now today and all the rest of it. Like, do you know what I mean? You know, in other words, like, it's not going to be you, like.
Yeah.
So that kind of a way, like,
yeah.
you can say things and you could smooth things over, and if it's a bit bumpy or, you know, if you can't do these hours because you've the kids going to school and all the rest of it, well, we're actually looking for somebody now to do shifts and to be a bit more flexible now and all that. Like, do you know what I mean? And
Yeah. You
having, you know, in other words, you having kids, like, you're not going to be flexible, are you, really? You know what I mean? So you know you're not going to get the job. Like, you know, it's just, I mean, it's an employer's market out there. Like, I mean, they can do what they want.
Do you think it still is at the moment, though? Because
it is.
At the moment you're talking about people are saying, you know, they can't get chefs, they can't get food staff, those kind of jobs.
Yeah, because they're not getting chefs because they're not paying them the proper wages.
Mm.
I mean, you've got nurses, like a chef. I mean, like, I'm a chef, right? I'm qualified, right?
Are you?
Chef de partie. You're talking chef de partie. You're talking at least €14 an hour. You're talking a normal chef, whatever, talking with 30, 35 grand a year. I mean, you think a hotel and a restaurant is going to pay a chef like that? Yeah, they're not, like.
They're not going to pay that kind of money, like.
Yeah.
They're not going to do it, like, because they know they can get other people in cheaper to do it.
Yeah, so they want you young, you reckon, cheap,
yeah,
and kids free.
Yeah, they want you young, cheap, and kids free, and flexible to their needs.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that.
And are you working at the moment?
No. But I mean, what I'm saying is, like, is that it's hard. Like, I mean, I'm asked questions like, why do you want to work so many hours? Because I can only work so many hours a week anyway. Like, you know, it's just my illnesses. Like, you know what I mean? I can't. Like, you know, I'm asking just for a couple of hours. But they're not asking just for a couple of hours. They want you for this, and they want you to be flexible, and they want you to do somersaults, and they want you for this amount of money and this, and they know they get it. Like,
yeah.
They know they'll get it, like, and that's the reason why they're being like that, like, because they know they'll get people to jump over hoops for them and do this and do that and be flexible and all this kind of crack, like. And you know what I mean? Look around, yeah. It's not a boom as such, like, as in construction.
Yeah.
It's a boom more manufacturing, computers, office, and what's happening is with the low 9% VAT rate and catering. That's all following suit. Look at the amount of eateries that are happening around the place.
Well, we've had restaurants on Frederick talking about that, saying they're finding it really hard now because there's so many new ones.
Exactly. They're popping up all over the place to meet the needs of all these office workers, like.
Because
when you're sitting down and sitting in an office all day in front of a laptop, you're not exactly thinking of, Xworks or Windows 5 or how to do that file of fax or whatever. You're thinking of your lunch in my place you're going to eat.
Tell me about it. Frederick, look, thanks a million. Great to talk to you. Hopefully we'll get you on again. But he's right. Well, I did say to PG yesterday, the first thing I think about in the morning is what I'm going to have for dinner that day. So I'm definitely one of those people. But back to Sharon's email. Do you think they can? Can they ask you in a job interview about your children? Janice, what about you? Have you been asked a question like that? Hello? Janice?
Hi, Deirdre. Yes.
Are you in a hands-free, Janice?
I am, yes.
Yeah, can you come off that for me?
One second.
I'll put you back on hold there if you can come off the hands-free, please. Anyone, if you're ringing in, no hands-free, and turn off the radio in the background, please, as well, because it doesn't sound great on air. But Josephine says on Facebook, it's completely illegal question to ask. One of the 9 grounds of discrimination. Under equality legislation, discrimination is based on any one of the following distinct grounds is unlawful. These grounds are gender, civil status, family status, sexual orientation, religion, age, that doesn't apply if you're under 16, disability, race, or membership of the traveller community, which I suppose is race now as well, that it's officially an ethnic group. Janice is back on too. Actually, I'm going to take a quick break before I bring Janice back in. I'm going to speak to Jen Hogan as well, who's a blogger at Mamatude, because there's a couple of different issues in this. What is it like for women coming back when they do have children, and is it going to be a black mark against you in your career forever? I personally have a stake in this, I suppose. It is an interesting point to me, but you know, there are plenty of you listening who have been in this situation well ahead of me. Is it an issue for you going back to work when you do have kids, that suddenly people go, oh well, she's not going to want to do that, or she's not going to want to do this, she'll never work late, or she'll never come in early, or she just doesn't really care anymore because she really just cares about the children? Has that been an issue for you? 083 396 96 96, 1850 715 996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
Call the Opinion Line. This is what you came for. 1850-715-996. Cork's 96 FM.
We're talking about interview questions after Sharon was asked in an interview what she would do if her children got sick. First, whether she had children and what she would do if they got sick. Janice, you're back on a better line now.
Hello.
Hi, Janice, how are you?
Hi, sorry about that.
No problem. Has this happened to you?
Oh my God, has it what? I have had, like, last year more so than now, because I'm in full-time employment, but last year I was going for numerous interviews and I just couldn't believe the stuff that they're still pulling, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yes, asked about kids, asked about when would I, you know, would it be inconvenient if, you know, I had to go away if my child was sick and so on. So I took to then going for interviews and taking off my wedding rings because I was asked, was I married? They've no right to ask you that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they kind of size you up the minute you go in the door. Some of them, not all, know, to be fair. And, you're of a certain age. You know, are you married? Do you have kids? It's the first thing on their minds and they want to fish it out.
and, you know, kind of know where they stand with you then from there on out.
Do you think they're looking at you and going, this woman is a pregnancy risk?
Absolutely. Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. I've gone for interviews last year, and I'm telling you, they went to 4, 5, 6 round, well, not six, sorry, that's exaggeration, 3, 4 round interviews, and I'm telling you, it's crazy. You know, yeah, call you back, and at some of these interviews, I've had to do presentations, you know, and it's just a waste of my time.
And what industry are you in, Janice?
I'm in marketing, and it's very hard. I've been to interviews where I can categorically say I did up presentations, and I saw later that where I didn't get the role, and funnily enough, I didn't see who did get the role in some of these interviews.
Mm.
I've seen my ideas implemented within their companies.
Yeah, I've heard of that happening a lot, actually, in marketing and PR in particular.
Horrendous. It's soul-destroying. Honest to God, it's a waste of your time. I mean, every time I went for these interviews, I had to get a babysitter. I had to, you know, get myself ready, get there, and, you know, like...
Well, it probably costs you £100 to go if you have to get a babysitter.
It does. Like, it's just never-ending, you know, and, you know, come back for a second interview, come back for a third interview, this kind of rubbish, and, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes there wasn't even a job there, as far as I could see.
Do you reckon a lot of them are going to an internal candidate or something before you ever got there?
Without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, it's very unfair to do that to someone and waste their time and get their hopes up as well, because when you're out of work and, you know, you're going for a second interview and a third, you're like, oh my God, maybe this is it. And then to be just absolutely discarded afterwards, it's not nice, you know. And then I've been to bigger companies where, like, that second, third round interviews, and just drop off. No communication, no update, and you feel like, you know, you're kind of annoying them, ringing them, you know, looking to see, you know, am I still in with a shout here, or has this fallen off completely? And then I remember one particular big employer now, it's not our policy to, you know, give feedback on why, because like that, it went so far, and I thought it went so well, I thought there's no way that I can't get this. And then when I did chase up, you know, because I wanted feedback, I wanted to know where was I falling off.
Yeah.
It's not our policy.
I actually thought they had a legal obligation to tell you why you didn't get it.
Yeah, so did I. But a very big employer now in Ireland, that's all I got. It was very cold as well. Like, you know, you're no longer required. Blah, it's over, you know, and no explanation. And I mean, he kind of, I got the impression from when he said that to me, he was saying it wasn't their policy to even follow up, the way he was just kind of brushing me off.
Yeah.
So, I sympathise with anyone. I waited a long time to get a job that I was happy in because I was in a role prior to the role I'm in now for maybe 5 years. And once I got pregnant, it turned very ugly very quickly. And I learned very fast when I went back from maternity leave that I wasn't wanted there.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened? Without naming the employer, obviously.
Yeah, I've never actually kind of spoken about it to a lot of people because it was very, very hard. It was a very hard time in my life because of the stress I was under when I went back. Basically, I was there for 5 and a bit years, and when I was due to go back, my son had colic, reflux.
Yeah.
And of course, he had to get it, of course, when I was due to go back. And,
6 months.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of always there, but it started getting worse. So I got in contact and I said, look, I might take the extra month because, you know, I wouldn't feel right, you know, going back and, you know, handing him over to someone when he's like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I covered all angles that I'm legally obliged to. And what's it called? So then... there was no one that was bought in to cover me while I was out in maternity. But all of a sudden, 3 months before I was due back, hey presto, somebody was in to cover me.
Right.
Now, this man wasn't trained up. He didn't really know what he was doing. But when I went back, I was told basically that I was kind of working under him.
Like
it wasn't ever said, but you know, it was kind of said in an unspoken way. So I was working with him and he absolutely made my life living hell. He was sitting behind me and he was turning his chair around and staring into my computer screen to see what I was doing. It was all intimidating, kind of belittling kind of things that he was doing. Everything that I tried to get stuck up back into, no, he's doing that now. There's two of you there now, and, you know, like, two of us were sitting there looking at each other sometimes because there wasn't enough work for us. It made absolutely no sense in the world to have him there.
Yeah.
So he and I obviously got stuck into it then after a while because I couldn't bear him. I really couldn't. He was hard to take. And, you know, it was just a real strain. So, you know, I tried once or twice to speak to him. I said, look, I really don't need this. I don't want this. If we could try and work together, and it would go well for a week, 2 weeks, and then he'd be back to the same kind of carry on. And every evening when I was leaving, he'd go into our manager's office and the two of them would sit in there openly speaking about me with the door open, looking out at me. And, wow. You know, it was just horrendous. So towards the end anyway, you know, I was always saying, geez, I wish he'd just go. You know, and then one day he pulled me aside and he said, look, I've something to tell you. And I went, look, I'm not here for an argument with you now. And he said, no, I want to talk to you in private. So he said, look, I'm leaving. And you know, the thing you always want, immediately, of course, I felt guilty.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, I'd know saying him coming or going, but I felt because of the situation, I was like, oh my God, am I to blame for this? Am I going to get pulled for this? And I said, look, I said his name. I said, I didn't ask for this. I said, I don't know what's going on here. I said, but I said, this isn't right. I've just come back to my job. And the way you've been carrying on, I don't know you, I said, but the way you've been carrying on, I said, there's something up. And he said, you're right. He said, I was told to do this.
What?
Yeah.
He was told to make your life a misery?
Absolutely.
To get you out?
To get me out. He was on more money than me. He had no experience as far as I could see. He could talk, but that's where it ended. He couldn't actually follow through in anything because... For a long time then, I was poo-pooed out of everything, you know. Let him do it. But then I started getting mad. So I said, Gwent, he's doing it. I just started watching everything he was doing. And I would send a group email to everybody, CCing everybody, showing everybody all of the errors and mistakes that he was making. Because I felt I have to kind of guard my job somehow. Or I have to show that actually, hang on a minute, I do know better here.
Yeah,
and once I started doing that, he then fell out of favour, and so he handed in his notice because he started getting the same treatment I was getting.
And I suppose it's very hard to know how exactly that appeared to other people. But did you feel that you were believed?
They could all see it in the office, but the culture in there was whoever turn it was for this kind of carry on, everyone just put their head down.
Yeah.
Yes, people sympathised, and you know, behind closed doors, yeah, that's desperate. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that shouldn't have happened. But if push ever came to shove, and my boss had to be called to task on something, they'd all fall away. And oh, I didn't see it. I didn't hear it.
Yeah,
you know, because they knew they had seen me go through it. I'd seen them go through when it was their turn. They knew. So, you know,
and after 5 years there, Janice, I mean, you think you have friends somewhere, and you probably came back off maternity leave, probably a bit lonesome for your colleagues, probably a bit happy to be going, in some ways happy to be going back to normality and back to where you thought your friends were.
Deirdre, I tell you now, I knew before I ever set foot back there, I knew what I was in for. I knew, but I just didn't want to give in. I just didn't want to go, you know what, you know.
Yeah,
I wanted to kind of, you know, try and get it back, and you know, why should I kind of drop off because, you know, I've had a baby or whatever.
Yeah.
And when we'd go into meetings, then at the start, if there was any conflict between that guy who was in to do my maternity cover, my boss would say, "I know it's hard for you now because you've had a baby," and I said to her one day, I said, "Stop bringing my son into this situation. My son has nothing to do with this." So. Yeah. It was always tried to be perceived as, oh, it's her and she's not coping because she's a baby. I was like, you know, you've 3 kids. Why is that not a problem for you?
Plenty of people have coped with it and plenty of people will continue to cope with it.
But this is it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could see exactly what was going on and it was just, you know, all of, yeah, like I heard you saying that then and like interviews, being in jobs for years,
people are still getting away with blue murder.
Yeah. Janice, look, thanks a million for the call. That's a kind of a cautionary tale for people. Thank you for that, and thanks for taking the time. And I hope your new job is going better.
Do you know what, Deirdre? It's like a breath of fresh air, because in my last job, in that job in particular, I was always late. I couldn't get there in time.
Yeah.
Because... do you know what? I didn't want to be there.
Yeah, that tells you an awful lot, doesn't it? Janice, yeah. Thanks a million. Eugene reckons that what Janice went through in her old job is constructive dismissal. I would imagine she'd have a very good case for it, Eugene, but maybe she's just moved on. And as she said, she hadn't told anybody else really about this. So maybe she just wanted to move on and clear it out of her mind. I think you probably would want to, really, if you're in that situation. It's a horrible thing to come back after 5 years working somewhere to your friends and your colleagues and be made to feel like that. Antoinette is on the line as well about this. Maybe she reckons maybe that interviewer who interviewed Sharon needs to brush up on his interview technique, and I'll talk to her in a moment. If you have a story to share, 083 396 96 96.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
Text The Opinion Line now. This is what you came for. 083 396 96 96. Cork's 96 FM.
We've been talking this morning about an email we got from Sharon, who feels she was discriminated against at a job interview. Sharon was asked what she would do if whether she had children, and what she would do if they got sick on a work day. Totally illegal, we think. Antoinette, is it totally illegal? Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Antoinette. Is that illegal?
It is illegal. There's so many different, you know, people, I think HR has just gone lazy in Ireland.
Yeah.
They're not doing enough research on, you know, to ask the person, you know, do you have kids? It's irrelevant if you have a child or not. You're there as a person for a job. They want to find out if you're capable of doing that job.
Mm.
Not if you have children. You know, like the interview, the way it was worded with me, I felt that the interviewer just carried on from the first question he asked, do you have kids? And if, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just like a step in to ask if she had children.
Yeah.
If they were sick, you know, what did they expect you to say? That you're not going to take the day off work, or you're not going to make sure your child is better, you know, and looked after. And so, you know, it is totally illegal to ask any of those, your age, even on a, you're not supposed to be asked that, your gender, your, you know, sexual preferences, they're not supposed to be asked. It's none of their business in an interview. You go for an interview for them to find out what you are like as a person.
Yeah, and if you're able to do the job.
And if you're able to do the job. I mean, ridiculous questions. I've often walked away from interviews saying I wouldn't work for the organisation.
Like what? What kind of things?
Like, just in, you know, stupid questions you're asked. Silly questions. The way, if, you know, you get a chance at an opportunity at the end of an interview to ask a question.
Yes.
And you ask the question and they're not able to even answer the question themselves.
Yeah.
So it's laziness on HR's part. And HR are not, you know, they have to realise that they're representing the company and organisation. And what impression are they giving me as an interviewee?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I spoke to somebody about this the other day. There's a lady called Fiona Donnelly. She's a Cork-based employment consultant. She deals with the employer, we'll say, rather than the employee. From Nexus Consulting is the name of her business. And she was saying, at the moment, actually, she said she deals with employers who, they want to be the employer of choice, that they realise is competition for staff a lot of the time. So you're looking at, I suppose, bigger employees, maybe employers who might be competing with multinationals for people. Like, everybody wants to work for Apple, because they know, you know, you've concerts and you've free lunches and you've all that kind of crack, or Google or whoever. And you have small office outfits that mightn't be able to compete with that, because they're not going to give you a free lunch and a concert and whoever playing on the roof and all that. But it doesn't seem to me like very many employers realise the impression they're giving you. Like, I've heard from people who have done interviews places who have been really badly treated, and they're a potential customer or a customer of that place.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd never give them your money if you knew they were treating people like that.
Exactly. And it's a culture. HR is this culture in Ireland that, I mean, I went to an interview and got ready to go for the interview, prepared for the interview for maybe a week, you know, researching the organisation or the company, and travelled for it, as Janice was saying earlier, you know, put a lot of expense and hard work into being prepared for the interview and going in, and the person interviewing me in a tracksuit, wearing a tracksuit. Wow. I go, no, this is just casual.
Like, were you being interviewed for a job as a PE teacher? Because if not...
Yeah, exactly. And it was actually a HR position.
Oh, wow.
And I was actually disgusted. I was there, like, going, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, and he was questioning my qualifications, you know, saying, oh, well, you should have put this here and this here and this here. And I was just sitting in front of him saying, well, you know...
Take a look in the mirror.
A tracksuit? You know, I'm after travelling from Tipperary to Cork.
Yeah.
Spend an X amount of money.
And you're there in a tracksuit.
Yeah, and you're sitting in a tracksuit saying this is casual. And another instance, it was the same. You're prepping again, you're doing all your research and you're going in and you're being told, oh, this is just a casual chat. Why not tell people, you know, sorry, we'd like to meet up with you. Or Skype. Use Skype. Yeah. That's a tool.
Yeah. If you're a casual chat wasting, and you've probably spent €50 on petrol and whatever else.
Exactly. Mm. If you're going to be wasting someone's time like that, go on Skype and Skype the person for your casual chat.
Yeah.
You know, HR does not, you know, it's so important. Like, the companies have a strategic plan. They want this plan done. They need to get people that are going to be, you know, different people for different parts of teamwork. You know, and they have this thing, it's called, what do they call it? Fit. Will you fit into
the organisation? Yeah.
And will you fit into this? But what is fit like? You know?
Yeah, well, that's the million-dollar question on tonight, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Because I have a different opinion, or I may question your organisation.
That's the end of you. And Jeanette, we'll have to come back to this after the break, because thank you for taking the call, because there's a lot more people to speak about this, and we have a solicitor on after the news about it as well. So if you have anything to say on this, you know where we are. 0833 96 96 96.
You're listening to a repeat of the 96FM Opinion Line. Phone and text lines are now closed. The Opinion Line with PJ Coogan. 1850-715-996.
Well, the Bowl PJ is on his holidays for a couple of weeks, so you're stuck with me. It's Deirdre here. I forgot to mention in the last hour of the competition, it is a lovely competition for the summer that is in it. Hopefully we'll have beautiful weather tomorrow evening for a summer's evening on the quad with Ronan Tyne and Fiona Murphy and Karen Underwood on Saturday 15th of July, as I said, that's tomorrow, in aid of Enable Ireland, UCC, sorry, in aid of Enable Ireland, Pieta House and Cork Deaf Enterprises. We have three pairs of concert tickets, plus an invitation for two to attend a private pre-concert drinks and canapes reception. Very posh indeed. Hosted by the Riverley Hotel. So to win one of three sets of tickets, we have a very, very, very difficult question for you. You may need a moment. Where is the quad? I know, very tough. 083 396 96 96. You can text or WhatsApp your answer to that, and Richard will be picking the winners. He's like Alec from KPMG, but even more serious about it. So you can text to that number, and three lucky winners today, and it should be a beautiful evening. It's always a lovely, lovely event. So thank you to UCC for that. Oops, give it away. Now, before I go back to our topic, I just want to mention something. If you need cheering up today, there is a Facebook page called Grass Cut for Hugs, Galway's free grass cutting service. It's three young fellas called Jack, Dominic and Owen. They have a Facebook page where they are offering to cut people's grass for free. If you are retired, disabled, unwell or getting treatment, or a single parent, unfortunately they're in Galway, so they're not going to come to Cork for you, but they are the three loveliest looking young lads I have ever seen in my life. They're there with their mower and their fly mower, whatever else they have, and the rake. They're standing there for the photo, and they are giving away their services for the whole summer for free to people who need their help cutting their grass. I just think it is the nicest thing I've seen in ages. It would really restore your faith in humanity. And I see a friend of mine saying if her daughter ended up with one of them, she'd be thrilled. And I can only say if my son ended up being like one of them, I would be thrilled too. I think it's just a lovely lovely, lovely way to be. And we don't see enough of that kind of thing. I'm sure it goes on, but we don't see enough of it, and it's nice to see. So it's Grass Cut for Hugs. So have a look at that page and it'll really warm the cockles of your heart. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. We've been talking about interviews and discrimination at work. Basically, we were contacted by Sharon, who had a job interview in a childcare setting, who was asked, do you have children? And if you do, and if so, what would you do if they got sick on a work day? That's a pretty obvious no-no, I would have thought. Michelle Cronin is on the line. She's a solicitor with O'Sullivan Whelan Solicitors. Morning, Michelle.
Morning, Deirdre. How are you?
I'm not too bad, Michelle. I'm a bit horrified at these stories, to be honest. Is this kind of thing going on all the time?
Well, I think it is. And I think employers, maybe they're a little bit casual sometimes about the interview process, or, you know, the interview might descend into more of a conversation and they're not thinking about what they're actually saying.
Mm.
Because, I mean, they're leaving themselves wide open under the equality legislation.
Yeah.
If the applicant or the interviewee feels they've been discriminated against because of the questions that have been put or the answers that have been given. It's a bit of a minefield for employers in one respect, but if employers, you know, take the necessary steps to kind of think, what questions can I ask, what questions do I ask, and then ask each interviewee the same questions,
yeah,
well, then you avoid trouble. It's when you go off script that problems emerge, you know.
I mean, have you had many cases where somebody has come to you and said, look, I'm being discriminated against in my workplace, or I feel I didn't get a job because of this, or anything like that? Do people take it further?
Oh, they can. People do take it further. I mean, you know, even in terms of advertising now, people, employers, if they advertise for a particular age range, Ryanair got into difficulties with that a number of years ago. They advertised for a young and dynamic professional. Lidl got into some difficulties. They advertised for a graduate with no more than 2 to 3 years experience, because that, you see, is seen as discriminating against people on the basis of age, which isn't okay. So people do, I suppose, take action if they feel they've been discriminated against. There is nine grounds of discrimination prescribed by the Acts, and they're age, disability, gender, sexual orientation, family status, marital status, race, religion, and then membership of the travelling community.
Mm-hmm.
And if people feel they're being discriminated against under any of those grounds, they may have a cause of action, and they bring that cause of action to the Workplace Relations Commission.
So it doesn't go to court, it goes to the Workplace Relations Commission?
It goes to the Workplace Relations Commission. That replaced the Employment Appeals Tribunal and the Equality Tribunal. It's kind of centralised all of the employment and equality, I suppose, avenues under one umbrella. And then, you know, if you go there and if either party aren't happy, there's the right of appeal to the court system, etc. And the Workplace Relations Commission have a very detailed website as well that's available for people to have a look at. I suppose, you know, people might think it's difficult to prove whether you've been discriminated against, say, in an interview setting. What you can do is you can ask for notes of all the interviews, and the employer would be obliged to provide that proof.
Okay, yeah, because Janice was on earlier, and Janice was saying that she did loads of interviews. She felt she didn't get a few of them because she was married and she's of a certain age, and she was coming back from after having a baby after she had left her other job. But she said one employer, she said a big employer, refused to tell her why she didn't get the job. But they can't do that, Michelle, can they?
I'm not too sure if they're obliged to tell you why you didn't get the job. I suppose, you know, that could be seen as infringing on other people. Then, if the employers, I want to better put it, if the employers kind of clever about it, if they don't overtly ask questions, that you can say, well, you asked that question, therefore I have a legitimate claim of being discriminated against.
Yeah.
I think they're protecting themselves in that way. I mean,
but even that about releasing the notes, like if you go and ask them afterwards for their notes, do they have to give them to you?
You could make an application under the Data Protection Act,
right,
and see if they can be forced to provide them under that. I suppose employers, as a courtesy, would often say to people, look, you didn't get the job because, you know, I feel you need to brush up on this, or maybe your skills, you know, you don't have quite the same skill set that we require, or, you know, we actually end up promoting someone from within, you know. That would be more of a courtesy as opposed to an actual requirement.
Okay.
Because sometimes, you know, people don't get jobs because the employer feels that maybe the person just wouldn't be a good fit personality-wise and things like that.
Yeah, and that's perfectly legitimate. I mean, nobody wants to work with somebody they don't get on with.
Yeah, or they might just see, look, it's not, the person isn't a good fit for whatever kind of dynamics they have, or etc. You know, they're looking for a particular personality type.
Yeah.
But it depends really. The employer, just if they need to protect themselves in as much as possible by working out what questions they want to ask, working out what information they need, and keeping good detailed notes of what happens in the interview process.
Mm. So a casual chat, if you're going to have a casual chat with somebody, you better frame it as that and not as a job interview.
I wouldn't even frame it as a casual chat. I don't think you can, you know, if you're in front of the Equality Tribunal, or the WRC as they are now, I don't think that'll wash.
There's no such thing.
No, I don't think it is. I mean, you know, if someone is being spoken to with a view to being employed, regardless of how they choose to characterise it, it's still an interview.
Yeah.
And that's the beginning, middle and end of it, really.
Yeah.
So they need to be careful. And employees, I suppose, or prospective employees, they, you know, if they have a right of action if they feel they've been discriminated against.
So
I remember a few years ago, even,
yeah.
I don't know if you remember this, it was late, so it's a long time ago now, I'm showing my age. Gay Byrne, he was still the host, and there was a good few female TDs, I think, at the time, he had about eight of them on with him, and he asked a few of them about their childcare arrangements.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just, I remember that I was quite young. there was such shock, you know,
yeah.
because people were saying, well, if they were male TDs, he wouldn't be asking,
yeah.
and things like that. So I suppose, you know, it's been a very steep learning curve over the last 20 years for people as well.
Yeah.
Because I suppose, you know, the Irish are maybe prone to having the chat and just talking.
Well, that's it. We're really kind of naturally nosy as well.
Oh, we are. Yeah, of course. Of course we are. And that's why you're in your job, and that's why I'm in my job.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, but you just, I mean, it's just, you need to be fair as an employer. You need to be fair. You need to be even-handed, and you need to have an open, I suppose, just an open approach that, you know, if you do find yourself being scrutinised by the Workplace Relations Commission, that you can stand over your approach. Mm. You can stand over every aspect of it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Michelle, thanks a million for your time this morning.
No, not at all.
Thanks, always interesting to hear the legal perspective. Ellie says on Twitter, is there something wrong with a father taking a day off to mind a sick child? Why presume it has to be the mother? You're spot on, Ellie, and I find it kind of incredible the way people do always assume that it's going to be the mother. It depends on the nature of both of their jobs, I suppose. Who is it easier? Who can get a day off more easily? And, you know, or who can make up the time, or whose job is more flexible or whatever. I suppose I'm lucky. I came from a house where there was one person self-employed and the other person was a teacher, so she was off for a good bit of the year anyway. But my dad was always around home, so there was never a problem with those kind of things. For houses where two people are going off out to an office for a long day at work, you know, in one setting, and they can't work from home or anything, that's very difficult. I don't know how people manage it. But the people who, to my mind, actually seem to have it toughest in this situation are the self-employed, because, of course, they've no maternity leave. And I'll be talking to somebody who found themselves self-employed with premature twins and having to go back to work in just a moment. Still interested in hearing your stories. 1850 715 996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
Call the Opinion Line. This is what you came for. 1850 715 996. Cork's 96 FM.
I think our last call on maternity leave for this morning, and well, I suppose what it's like being a woman in the workforce, a mother particularly in the workforce, Ciara Crossan from weddingdates.ie. Good morning.
Morning, Deirdre. How are you?
I'm not too bad, Ciara. Now, you're very busy this morning because you have twins nearby and needing your attention, so thanks for taking the call.
That's okay.
Self-employed people, of course, don't get any maternity leave.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of look on as people that are, you know, working in full-time jobs and getting the 9 months off or whatever. It's seems so amazing to me because I just didn't have that, but, you know, it's just a different kettle of fish altogether, I guess.
I mean, you love being self-employed, you love running your business, all of that. Mm-hmm. This isn't a complaint or anything, but I just thought I couldn't get over your story. You'd premature twins.
Yeah, so I was pregnant with twins, obviously, it was my first pregnancy, and I worked right the way through, of course, and had a really uncomplicated pregnancy, thank God. But I was in work on a Friday afternoon, and then I moved house on the Saturday, and then on the Sunday, I started getting the pains. So into the hospital I went, and yeah, the boys came 9 weeks early. So it was such a shock, like literally. My brother worked with me at the time, and he went into the office on the Monday morning and told all the gang, Ciara had the babies yesterday, and they were like, what? They couldn't believe it because I had been in work on Friday.
Yeah.
So it was a big shock. But yeah, they were teeny tiny, but the
CUMH, I mean, the midwives there and the neonatal unit, they are incredible. We spent 6 weeks in there with them. And, yeah, the boys are perfect, grand, you know, happy, healthy kids now. But, yeah, it was definitely a pretty harrowing time. And the fact that it was so unexpected, I hadn't, you know, put in all my plans yet. I obviously did plan on taking some maternity leave. I was due to have them in January, but they came at the beginning of November. So I just wasn't ready.
Yeah.
So in between being up at the neonatal unit and pumping breast milk, I was nipping down to the office, making sure everything was okay back at base. So it was, yeah, it was a bit, looking back at it now, it was kind of an insane time. But, you know, I didn't really think about it when I was going through it, you know.
I actually can't imagine what that's like because, first of all, just having twins on its own, that would be enough for me because my fella doesn't sleep at all. So I'd imagine if I had twins, I wouldn't have had any sleep for the last 10 months. So, I mean, presumably you didn't get any sleep at this period.
Yeah, like I suppose the first, I always say to new moms, like the first three to 6 months at least, you're a zombie. Like it's a total blur. And I never realized the power of sleep.
Yeah.
Like when you don't have it, when you're sleep deprived, I mean, I always say they use it as a form of torture.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're just, I remember just being so brain dead, like walking into a room, not knowing why I was in there, just, you know, making a decision. Will I go to the shop now or will I go to the shop in an hour? And then like not feeling like I can make that decision.
Yeah.
And I'd be normally a very decisive person, but yeah, it was the sleep, not having any sleep was definitely a big challenge. But the boys, though, thankfully, because they were in the NEO for so long, the midwives got them into such a good routine.
Yeah.
So that was the making of it for me. Like when they gave me the boys to come home, and like every first time parent feels this when you're in the lift in CUMH and you feel
terrifying.
Like somebody's going to put their hand on your shoulder and say, not tonight, love. Like a bouncer stopping you from going into a nightclub. You can't believe they're letting you go home with this baby. So yeah, like I remember when I got them home, I was like, look, the midwives have just done such an amazing job. They've got them in this perfect routine. I'm not going to mess this up. So I was like military with the timings and bottles and breast meat feeding and everything, just, you know, every 3 hours, you know, the usual routine, but I really like really regimented. I had to with twins and the fact that I went back to work so quickly then once they came home from the NEO.
So how long had they been home when you went back?
Just 2 weeks.
2 weeks. So they were, how old were they then?
So
8 weeks?
They were technically 8 weeks old, but really they were kind of only, you know, brand new.
They should have only just been born then.
They should have only just been born. So they were due early January. They came early November and we got them home literally the 18th of December. So just a few days before Christmas, and had Christmas at home and kind of the normal Christmas holidays. And then I went back the first week of January, but just part-time initially because I was breastfeeding, so I couldn't be away from them for more than 3 to 4 hours at a time. So I would do like the afternoon. I'd go in after lunch, do a few hours, and then get home in time to do the next feed.
And how did your brain work during this period? This is the bit I can't get over. I mean, I don't know actually how people do it. I mean, I guess you're in a situation nearly like somebody in America where they don't have any maternity leave, where you were back pretty much straight in. And were you able to function?
I was. I mean, I can't. It's actually really hard even to remember because it is kind of a bit of a blur. But you just do it. Like I'm kind of just the kind of person I can just compartmentalize things. So when I'm in work, I don't think about the boys at all.
Yeah.
And then when I'm at home, I don't think about work. So like even today now, since I had the boys, I cut down to a 4-day week. So you know, I don't work Fridays. That's exclusively my time with them. And you know, I'm just kind of just have to switch off. I put on my out of office every Thursday evening and I say, I don't work Fridays, I'm at home with my twin boys, call the office if it's an emergency kind of thing. So and just having that kind of being able to separate my brain. So I just remember when I went in that those first few weeks that I would literally just I would just switch a little part of my brain. And I suppose just the way I work as well, it was good for me to keep going and keep working, because I'd say if I had stayed at go on my maternity leave, I would have turned into complete mush.
Yeah, like it is a bit of an identity thing for people. I know when I went off, I said, oh, I'd probably go off social media and everything now. And, you know, I don't know what I thought I was going to be doing, to be honest, sitting looking at a baby. But I actually found myself on it more than ever because I suppose you're looking up reflux and vomiting and nappies and whatever on Facebook groups and seeing what other people are doing. But I find, I think it must be very hard for people who completely check out of work to come back. So you were straight back into it. Jeez. Ciara, you're some woman for one woman. Fair play to you.
I think all mothers get that title.
That's true, I suppose. But jeepers, twins and the whole lot. Fair play to you. Do you know who you remind me of actually today? And it's another one from social media this morning. Anyone who's on Instagram or maybe any social media probably today, Beyonce has released the photo of her twins.
Oh, wow, I haven't actually seen it yet.
She's go and look at online. It. It's a thing of beauty. Enjoy your day off with the twins today, Ciara, and thanks for taking the call. And fair play to you. Yeah, anybody who is on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, Beyonce has released a picture of herself with the twins. So it's like the photo she did when she was pregnant with all the big long dress and the kind of, I don't know, it looks a bit like a mermaid outfit to me or something, but it's meant to be very artistically significant. I don't know about that. I just know she looks absolutely unreal. She's like a goddess. And the twins are called, what are they called? Sir Carter is the boy and Rumi is the girl. I thought Rumi was like some ancient Indian poet or something, but apparently it's a girl's name now. And the boy is not, I don't know if Sir is his first name or Sir Carter is his first name, but then he would be called Sir Carter, so he's probably not called that. But Rumi Carter and Sir Carter to add to Blue Ivy. God love them. They'd better make something of themselves, because if they're kind of failures in life, those names will really hang over them. I think you have to really think about that when you're naming your children. Anyway, yeah, if anybody wants to come in on that, 0833 96 96 96. Now on from the girl stuff, if any of you men are listening wondering, are we going to speak to any men about anything masculine today? Yes, we are. John O'Donovan, of course, is on the line. We couldn't have a show without John, and he wants to talk about alcohol and flights. Apparently Spanish tourism chiefs are seeking an alcohol ban on holiday flights from Ireland and the UK. They must have heard PJ was on his holidays. No, in all seriousness, they are, because apparently the flights have been getting rowdier and rowdier. And anybody who's been on a flight with a rowdy group, I had a particularly memorable one myself a couple of years ago to Turkey, where somebody actually passed out in the airport upon arrival in wherever it was, Izmir. So, you know, it is a bit of an issue. John is on the line about this, and I'll talk to him in just a moment. 1850 715 996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
Text the Opinion Line now. This is what you came for. 083-396-96-96. Cork's 96 FM.
Now, authorities in the Balearic Islands want the EU to ban alcohol on flights and in airports. Tourism chiefs in Ibiza and Magaluf have asked Spain and the European Union to stop the sale of drink on board planes in an effort to battle antisocial tourism. So, I can understand why. However, it's not clear if the local authorities want drink to be banned on all EU flights or only those going to the Balearics. Some holidaymakers at Dublin Airport were less than enthusiastic about the idea, they told News Talk. I only misbehave when I don't have a drink, said one. And someone else said, you have to have a drink when you're going on your holidays. And you know what? For God's sake, if you can't have a drink on your holidays, when can you have one? Morning, John.
Morning, how are you?
Do you not think, you know, people are entitled to have a drink on their holidays?
Well, I have that clip as well there on News Talk, and they've got this idiot who says that he only misbehaves if he doesn't have a drink, right? So, I mean, that was a crazy kind of a comment, really. To me, look, if you're on a bus or if you're on a train, if you're on the Cork to Dublin train the other right, and mm-hmm. something happens that people are intoxicated,
yeah.
somebody can pull the cord, I mean, the conductor on the train, port or whatever, he can stop the train. At any given point, any other station, the guards can be called and the person or persons can be taken off the train.
Yeah.
The same with a bus. But if you're a couple of miles up in the sky, I mean, you have to divert the plane to the nearest airport, right? Just commode everybody. The flight is delayed by hours, you know, and not alone that, but I mean, ugly scenes can happen in a very contained area, such as the cockpit of a plane or the passenger under it. I think it's madness. I don't see why there should be any alcohol served on board planes. And before you get on the plane, like, especially flights, like some of the airports, the bars open early in the morning for early flights.
Yeah.
To me, they shouldn't open until after 9, and they should definitely close at 10 p.m. because if you're going out late at night, people could be tanked up in the bar before they even get on the plane for very late flights going to the likes of Canaries and Portugal and places like that.
What about though, like there's a lot of people, and I don't even think it needs to be this far, to be honest. I really enjoy a drink either on a, if I'm on a long flight, have one to relax and, you know, kind of settle in, or before I go. But what about people who are really nervous on planes? I mean, it might help them.
Yeah, well, that came up, you know, I had that in a few discussions. But the thing is, look, I mean, you just have to do some kind of relaxation techniques or go to a hypnotist before you go on if you're that scared of flying. But I don't see why you should be kind of just make allowances because there might be one or two individuals on who are nervous and everyone else have to put up with the car allergy then because I'm with a load of drunken idiots for 4 hours in a very tight space.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's fair, right? You know, and let's be honest. I mean, young people get a bad rap now always, like going to these places, they're the right. But like, I've been on flights over the years, like you mentioned, some from Dublin, they're like on the port or whatever. And believe you me, it's the 50 and 60-year-olds are complete, you know what?
Do you think so?
Oh, Christ, yeah. You want to see some of them dopes in a car and you're like, they're out of their skull before they even get on the plane. So yeah. I wouldn't put all this at the door of the young people. I know they get a bad rap now going to these places, you know, and at this time of the year. But it's not all young people like you mean. It's their parents' age and sometimes even older, their grandparents.
Yeah, that's true. I've seen people of all ages really on flights having a few pints before they get on the plane. And actually the last flight I was on was in February. I was going to Portugal for a week and it was from Dublin and we flew out at, it was one of those early morning ones. So the flight itself probably wasn't till 9:30, but you know the way you're in the airport at 6 or 7. And there were people throwing down the pints at 6:30 in the morning.
That's absolutely insane.
Oh, you know, I don't know how they were doing it. I mean, I'd been up all night with the baby anyway, so I was sure I didn't know what time it was. But you're looking at us going, like, for your breakfast, like.
Yeah, it's madness. I mean, you're drinking, some of them people, I mean, they're drinking an empty stomach. And, you know, I mean, if something kicks off, everyone reacts differently to alcohol, like in any situation, whether it's inside in a lounge bar. But you can imagine, as I said, like if you get one aggressive person or two or three and you're that high up in the air, I mean, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's true. And most,
before you go there, what would you think of Mr. Trump's comments about the French First Lady?
I'm not laughing at the comments. I'm laughing at you asking me about it.
Was he being both sexist and ageist?
He's just been totally inappropriate. That is not a thing you say to somebody at a business meeting.
No.
For anybody who didn't see it, he met Mrs. Macron, who is actually, it's funny because the age gap between Mr. and Mrs. Macron is very similar to the age gap between Mr. and Mrs. Trump, but it is of course the other way around.
Yeah,
so
yes,
I'd say it's probably the first time he's ever looked at a woman his own age with any kind of sexual interest, to be honest. But he looked at her and he kind of looked her up and down in this obviously really creepy way because that's what he does. And he went, oh, you're in really good physical shape. Yeah, really good. He's disgusting.
Well, I mean, like to say, look, if he just said, look, you're beautiful. I mean, look, some people maybe don't like that kind of stuff either, like the femininity maybe.
But the femininity now. But to be fair, John, right, if you were at a high-level business meeting, I mean, this is the highest-level type of business meeting the world, and he looks her up and down, no matter what he's saying to her, it's probably, like, you don't comment on someone's physical appearance. Like, if she was a big fat lump, would he have gone, oh, you're a big fat lump? He probably would.
But what disturbed me about it, the fact is, like he said, like you're beautiful, and he said, you're in great shape. I mean, he might as well follow it up with, for your age.
For your age, absolutely. Yeah, what if she had responded in kind?
Yeah, well,
what if she had turned back and said, you look like an orange crisp?
But I thought, to be honest, to pass that remark, like he was a total clown, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he is a clown, though. I mean, I think everybody knows he's a clown. But I actually just, I couldn't believe it. And the way, the poor woman, she actually physically backed away from him. I mean, it was like the Katrina Perry thing a couple of weeks ago. You know, it's not what he's saying, it's the context in which he's saying it. Like, most people enjoy a compliment in the right context.
When it's coming, like, from such a high level, like from one president to the other president of another country's wife, you know, it's most inappropriate.
I mean, in any kind of an employee, like a work, business, diplomatic situation like that, it's just not appropriate. But I mean, if they were at a disco or something, fair enough.
Well, if people just met each other and hadn't seen each other for a while, and somebody got married and one partner was older than the other, I mean, you wouldn't even say it in that context, you know?
You wouldn't. Sorry, I'm laughing. Roy from Fermoy is tweeting and he says, spooky. It's like he's right there in the studio. Yeah, Roy, I have been off for a good bit of time. I've been practicing my Donald Trump impression while I was away. I've very little else to do in the small hours of the night. John, yeah, I think you're right. It was just creepy and inappropriate. Yeah, but he's just horrible anyway.
He just made a total ass of himself. Yeah.
He did, but you're nothing new there, I suppose. Yeah. Poor Mrs. Macron. I'd say she's well able for the likes of him anyway, to be honest.
Well, I say so.
Well able. Thanks, John. Thank you. Bye. But I did find it very interesting, though, about the age gap, because the gap between the Macrons kind of does freak me out a small bit, I'll be honest. But equally, the Trumps. I think poor Melania looks like she's been kidnapped. And Mrs. Macron and Emmanuel, I do think it's a bit weird, to be honest, the setup. I know people can fall in love at any age, and age is only a number and everything, but I do think it's a bit weird that he was in school when they got together, or when they met and fell in love, but didn't do anything about it officially. Now, Vivian is on the line as well about this. Vivian, you live in Spain, so you've probably seen loads of this carry on over and back over the years.
Hi, morning, Deirdre. I have, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to ban all alcohol on all flights, or all flights going into the Balearics. I think it's not a question of banning alcohol. It's maybe, again, I keep harping on, it's cultural differences. Maybe it's education. Here in Spain, in Spanish society, I mean, you can go into a bar at any time of the day or night, even any of the cafeterias, and order a drink. And nobody will bat an eyelid at you.
Yeah.
But they don't drink. The difference between the Irish and the Spanish, and I think it's, I mean, the Irish and the Brits and the Germans, the Northern Europeans, the difference between Northern Europe and Southern Europe is in Southern Europe, when they drink, they drink quite a lot, but they don't drink in order to get drunk.
Yeah.
That isn't the objective. The objective is to have fun.
Yeah, and they drink with food, and it's sociable.
Absolutely, yeah. Sociable. Always with food, socialising. You know, even, I mean, people might be shocked, you know, you'd have small kids in bars here at 11 and 12 o'clock at night, but nobody is falling down, peed out of their brain, you know, mind drunk. It isn't seen as a good thing to be so drunk. People react badly to it. They're like, God, would you look at your one?
Yeah.
Embarrassed, actually, for you.
And do you think, Vivian, actually, that would be enough social pressure for people to not do it?
I think we have a massive change in our attitude.
Yeah. Because you know the way here somebody falls down drunk and everyone's like, geez, your man is gas.
He's gas. Yeah, exactly. I think it's going to take an awful long time to change that. I do think it's cultural. You know, I think we talked about it before. I talked about it certainly with PJ. You know, here on Good Friday, you can get a drink.
Yeah.
You can get a drink at 7 in the morning. But the big difference is they drink smaller amounts and kind of steady, and always with food.
Yeah.
Not pints of the stuff, not glugging it back. You know, well, hey, let's all get pissed. Woohoo. No. And not, I mean, okay, maybe the odd exception to that would be the teenagers. They do what's called botellón. Botellón basically is they drink in the parks because the weather's so good.
Gatting.
And they're young.
Yeah.
By that, I mean underage very often, 15, 14,
and the 15. Age is younger in Spain, isn't it, for drinking?
It is. I mean, it's the one time that you will see people abusing it, because the young ones are out of their faces.
Yeah.
But certainly not, you won't see people of my age, 30s, 40s, 50s. They'll certainly be drinking, but they won't. They will not be falling down. Absolutely not. And the thing is, I don't know where they put it, because they can be drinking steadily all day. You might have a drink in the morning, and then you'll be having some nibbles, and then you'll have a drink in the afternoon, and a drink at 5, and, you know, it's different. It's just very different.
But at no point are you getting to that really, like, horrible drunkenness that people get here.
No, you don't see it. And maybe the way to deal with it is, again, as I say, I do think it's a Northern Europe, Southern Europe divide. Because you can be damn sure the Spanish economy welcomes all these tourists. I don't know if I read something like 78 million tourists came to Spain last year.
Wow.
I mean, it's a massive number.
Yeah.
So imagine if we suddenly banned all alcohol. There'd be anarchy. They'd be rioting in the streets here. I don't think it's ever going to happen. I really don't. But I do think maybe what needs to be done is that the police here need to be less tolerant of those that are vomiting and defecating, and come on, it's not nice for anybody. You know, the drunken loud culture, and certainly they've been talking about it here on Spanish TV this week,
the same thing that you mentioned about the Balearic government, you know, calling for a ban. And there's a big divide in it. I think it isn't a case of banning. It's maybe a case of just educating Northern Europeans better, because it isn't just Irish, it's Brits as well, and the Germans, and the Dutch can hold their own, you know. Whereas the French, the Italians, the Spanish, yeah, they drink, but it's a very different mentality, you know.
Yeah, Vivian, thanks for that. That's an interesting perspective. It's always good to hear the side of it from Spain. thanks for that. I hope it's nice and sunny there today.
Oh, it's very hot.
Oh, you lucky thing. All right, talk to you soon. But it is an interesting one. Roy from Fermoy says, if people can't go for 2 hours without... if people can't go on a flight for 2 hours without a drink, then they have a problem. You see, it's not about that though, Roy. And funny, this is where I feel like I sound like PJ. I think me and PJ would agree on this. You know, I think people should be able to have a drink if they're on their holidays. Jeepers, you work hard enough during the year and you're trying to wind down. And I know it's not the only way of relaxing. There are loads of ways of relaxing. Just going on holidays is relaxing. But it is a part of holidays for a lot of people. And it doesn't have to be to excess. But I suppose there are always the aegis to ruin things for everybody else. I mentioned earlier, I remember being on a flight to Turkey from Cork a number of years ago. I'd say it's about 6 years ago now. And I arrived into Izmir and there had been a few, Fergal is telling me here, I have to say a few jars to sound like PJ, it's compulsory. Yeah, I like my point. A few jars. But this flight was full of, you know, couples and older people and, you know, a big range of people going to Turkey, to Kutsadasi, great spot for Cork people, or it was before, I suppose, all the terrorist attacks and things in Turkey over the recent years. And there was a couple on the flight and your man was absolutely ossified. Like, I have rarely seen anyone in any context this drunk, and I grew up in a pub, so like I have seen plenty of drunk people, but this guy, he drank a whole bottle of whiskey, I think, on the flight. I think he bought it in duty free on his way over and he was drinking it on the flight. I mean, you shouldn't be allowed to open duty free on the flight anyway. I mean, that would be a fairly basic rule I think they could enforce, but I'd say he'd been drinking in the bar in the airport, then he laid into the duty free bottle of whiskey. By the time he arrived in Izmir, he was literally falling around the place. He sort of wobbled off the plane. I don't know how he got off the plane, and he crash landed onto the floor in the baggage hall in Izmir, and there was about 20 poor Turkish guys standing around him. The last I saw of him on that leg was the 20 Turkish guys at the airport staff standing around him, kind of scratching their heads and looking at him like, what are we meant to do with this? And his poor wife or girlfriend, I hope she wasn't his wife, because God help her if she was married to that, she standing there, she had been kind of roaring at him for a while to get up, but standing there mortified. Her holiday was ruined before it had even kicked off. He'd ruined her week. We saw them on the way back and he was still drinking. You know, he was in slightly better condition than he had been, but obviously the whole week was that. So, and we met a number of people who had been staying in the same hotel as him. He was literally just drinking all week. Now, maybe that's an individual with a problem rather than, you know, a common cultural thing. But if you're going to be dealing with that kind of thing, maybe the people of the Balearics are right. Maybe they've had enough of it for a reason and they are looking at that kind of thing week in, week out. And, you know, I wouldn't particularly like to have that coming in all the time. However, Margaret and Kay on Twitter, Margaret says, I would rather listen to group having the crack on a flight than a professional moaner. I think that's in reference to John. But the crack is one thing, I suppose, and I don't mind the crack on a flight either. I think, you know, that's everyone is going on holidays, that's fair enough. And I've been on a train, actually, the Dublin to Cork train, one Friday evening after I had been up working in and doing a bit of TV stuff for TV3 on the late lamented Vincent Brown show. I came down late on the Friday evening on the last train, I think, and there was a Kayleigh on the carriage I was on, and it was amazing. And I was sitting beside a priest who got off at Limerick Junction, and we had the greatest old chat during this Kayleigh, and I didn't have a drink, but a few of the people playing the music did, and it was brilliant. It was a great time. So I suppose I can see it from both sides. What do you think? 0833 96 96 96 1850 715 996. We were talking about the TV licence yesterday and loads of people contacted us about it, so we'll come back to that in a moment with Thomas.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
call the opinion line. This is what you came for. 1850-715-996. Cork's 96 FM.
And PJ was discussing the TV license fee yesterday. Dee Forbes, the RTE boss, is looking for a license increase. They haven't had one for a number of years. They've had a load of redundancies in RTE over the past few years, and they've sold off some of the Montrose campus as well. Don't know where they'd be filming Fair City from now. But Thomas doesn't think they should get it. Morning, Thomas.
Hi, Dee, how are you?
Not too bad. God, that's an interesting noise in the background there.
Oh, I'm a bit out of breath. I'm playing around us here, going in the park with a couple of kids.
She's not too bad. Oh. Nice activity for a Friday. You don't think they should get any license fee increase?
No, definitely not. And I'll be honest, like, I'm just going to give you a couple of things written down here, right? You know, in Italy, they had the same problem going over the last couple of years where people weren't signing up and people weren't paying the fee, and they decided to actually half the license fee,
right,
to try and get more people obviously signed up for it. Whereas in this country, they seem to think that just because people won't sign up, we'll put it up, you know. Now, BBC Wales, right, have a similar size as say we have here in Ireland. They've got 800 staff employed, as opposed to over 3,000 staff employed in RTE.
How many channels does BBC Wales have?
Two, I think.
Okay.
Or maybe three. In fairness, like, we have news readers, like, reading off the teleprompters. They're on 150,000 a year. We have radio journalists with RTE. Obviously, this doesn't go on everywhere. Like, they're on 250,000, 300,000 a year.
Obviously, it does not.
Yeah, and this is what I was going to say, Dee. Like, I have spoken to a lot of people over the years. I haven't paid it ever, right?
Mm.
And I have spoken to a lot of people over the years. And if people seen that it was being shared out between all the radio stations, yourselves, TV3, Galway FM, if everybody was getting a slice of it, like, RTE get paid for their promotions the same as TV3 do.
Yeah.
And TV3 are able to survive. Yes, RTE needs everyone in the country to pay X amount of money. There's nothing on it.
TV3 had been kind of bailed out. They were in an awful lot of trouble and they were bailed out. So there's state money gone in there too.
But come here, it wasn't the citizens of Ireland, like, just put the money in that aren't putting it in and keeping it afloat every year, like, you know. Like, there used to be sport on it. They had soccer. Now all of a sudden it's gone to Sky. They had rugby. That's gone. You know,
would you say it would be a fair use of taxpayers' money then to pay billions to Sky or to the GAA or whoever for the sport?
Yeah, but like, if people are interested in the sport, like, there was, like, I constantly seen on social media of people that are saying they can't see it because it's on Sky, or they have to get Sky to be able to see it. Like, it's our national sport.
Mm.
No, they do have, like, the pick of games and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
But, like it's all, most of it is gone. Like, you turn it on, I think, was I seen a thing there that there's 60-something programmes on it a week, and after that, it's repeats after repeats. Like, the EU came in here in 2015 and said it's illegal to charge a TV licence fee where one company holds a monopoly over their rivals. No, that was swept under the carpet straight away. But the EU have said
How did that? Was that the European Court of Justice or the Commission? No, or
there was a commission that were here in 2015. It was nearly 2 years ago. No, I think it was the summer of 2015, and they said that it was illegal because one company holds a monopoly over everybody else. That's what I'm saying. If the money was shared out between everybody, I would actually go and pay the money if I thought that everybody was getting a slice of it. That it's not going to pay 400,000 a year DJs, or like people, there's people in there making tea, and there's people to make tea for the people making tea, and they're all getting unbelievable salaries. Like, when you look at four times the employment status, like, as what they have in BBC Wales. You know, like,
I suppose BBC Wales don't have. Yeah, I suppose if you look at some of the other things, now, just to play devil's advocate, I'm not sure even where I stand in it, to be honest. But if you look at, say, the RTE Concert Orchestra, BBC Wales don't have that.
And where is the RTE Concert Orchestra? Is it on the telly?
No, not necessarily. You'd say they were in the marquee there a few weeks ago.
Right, and are we funding them?
Yeah, through the RTE license fee.
So why aren't they out doing their own events and gigs to fund themselves? Why does the taxpayer have to fund them, or the citizens have to fund all that nonsense?
Well, a lot of countries would have a national concert orchestra funded by the taxpayer. So that comes out of RTE's funding, we'll say. Whereas in other countries, it mightn't come from TV licenses, it'll come from general taxation.
Yeah, yeah.
So, would you say we shouldn't have a national orchestra?
I've never in my life seen it or heard of it. Like, I don't know.
Jenny Green and the National Concert Orchestra.
Sorry?
You know Jenny Green when she played the Marquee?
I heard when she was down there. But is that National Concert Orchestra and 2FM with her on Saturday nights when she's playing
no.
her gigs?
No, not
you know what I mean? So where are they? Like, are they just out doing gigs? Like, if they're getting paid for that, like if RTE are struggling, right?
Mm.
Like, there's only two stations in this country, and they are playing commercial adverts. So why aren't they going back to these companies and saying, right, listen, like, this doesn't add up. Like, we need to get more money. Why is it always add 15 euros onto this, add 20 euros onto that, the citizens will pay it?
Yeah.
It's nonsense, like. And as I said, when you look at a country like Italy, that actually halved their television license fee. Now, I don't know if it goes to different broadcasters and that in Italy, but for them to be able to half it, because there wasn't such a good take-up rate, and yes, we decide, we're going to just add more money onto it.
Yeah. Definitely have a good point. Look, I'm going to have to go to Ray and have one more call on this.
Thanks,
Tommy. You make your case very well. And I mean, that does make sense. If people aren't paying for something, you don't make it more expensive and let less people pay it. That doesn't make any sense. Rayhan is on the line about this. Hi, Rayhan. You feel the same as Thomas, I think.
Hi, how are you? Yeah. I just feel like, it shouldn't be right. Like, you know, it shouldn't be because people are not actually paying money.
Mm.
Everybody not paying. So what they should do, they should put it down that everybody can sign up for that. Then actually they can get extra money.
Yeah.
Now, if
people paid less money, they would still get more.
Every time the poor people who are the middle class, they are just a victim of that. See, rich, they don't have no problem.
Mm.
But the poor who are see, most of the, as I know that on the... things like, and I read the other day, there is a 80% of people who are working in this country, like a minimum wages.
Mm, yeah.
So if they had to survive themselves, do you know how hard to survive in 925 with the rent is going to up, food is so expensive. So how they act that, and they don't have no entertainment. And after that, they go to the work, they have a problem with the work place, their employer. So they are just victims. So why after that they pay tax?
Yeah, and so people just, you tax, reckon people have enough things to be paying for, they shouldn't have to pay this too.
They are just paying too much. I said what they gonna do, like, you know, if they just try to give up now. Like, you know, I saw yesterday, like, so many people say we don't want RTE because we don't want to pay. So that money, that things cost people, like, you know, it's hard work. They want to have some saving for themselves.
Yeah.
It's not that you pay for other people sitting down there and they get thousands and thousands of money for sitting down only. And
oh,
you work
true.
Your ass off.
Yeah, it's true. Look, Rayhan, you have the last word on this week's show. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a point. We can come back to it next week if you like. For now, the competition winners, the quad is, of course, at UCC. Noel O'Mahony in Toker, Rosemary Murphy in Black Rock, and Laura Higgins in Ballinlock. Thanks to everyone who contributed this week. I'll be back bright and early on Monday morning. Show was edited by Brenda Denny and researched by Fergal Barry. The podcast will be up on iTunes and SoundCloud, and the show will be repeated on Monday morning.